Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 27th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're going to be reading out of the Gospel of Mark. Okay, Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 30 through 50. And they departed thence and passed through Galilee, and he would not have that any man should know it. For he taught his disciples and said unto them, The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of men, and they shall kill him, and after that he is killed, he shall rise the third day. But they understood not that saying, and were afraid to ask him. And he came to Capernaum, and being in the house, he asked them, What was it that you were disputing amongst yourselves by the way? But they held their peace, for by the way they had disputed among themselves who should be the greatest. And he sat down and called the 12, and said unto them, If any man desire to be the first, the same shall be the last of all, and servant of all. And he took a child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him into his arms, he said unto them, Whosoever shall receive one such children in my name receiveth me. And whosoever shall receive me receiveth not me, but he that sent me. And John answered him, saying, Master, we saw one cast out devils in thy name, and he followed not with us. And we forbade him, because he followed not us. But Jesus said, Forbid him not, for there is no man which shall do a miracle in my name that can lightly speak evil of me. For he that is not against us is on our part. For whosoever shall give you a cup of water to drink in my name, because ye belong to Christ, truly I say unto you, he shall not lose his reward. And whosoever shall offend one of these little ones that believe in me, it is better for him that a millstone were hung about his neck, and he were cast into the sea. And if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And if thy foot offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter halt into life than having two feet to be cast into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. It is better for thee to enter into the kingdom of God with one eye than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. For every one shall be salted with fire, and every sacrifice shall be salted with salt. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost its saltness, wherewith will ye season it? Have salt in yourselves, and have peace one with another. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 30 through 50. Okay, tonight I just want to bring up a few things that we're doing. We spoke about some of these things over the past couple of weeks. we're going forward with working with constructing the militia and also dealing with problems with some of our elected representatives concerning the Second Amendment, which is an assault on our unalienable rights. Anyone that has been elected into a government office and is using that office to leverage or use it as a platform in order to springboard an assault against our Bill of Rights or our Constitution as a whole, then they need to be indicted. these people took an oath to uphold and support the Constitution, and it's a crime for them to then assault that Constitution once they get into office. So we will be meeting together. We're planning to do this Thursday. I think we announced it last Monday. We were past that Monday. We're going to do it this coming Thursday. And, to come together for considering indictments. I'm going to have to push it off another week to the following Thursday, so it's not going to be this Thursday. I've got a lot of paperwork been working on, and some of these papers have been requiring more research than I realize. So we need to catch up and get all of this stuff together to get it up online so people will be fully informed in order to make a decision on indictment, yay or nay.
John?
Yeah.
It was reported that you announced that it was going to be Thursday on the Patriot Soapbox, so I put it in the newsletter for Thursday.
All right, well, we'll just pull back on that and let all people know that it's going to be the following Thursday.
Okay.
Because we're just not ready, and it would be a wrongdoing for us to go halfway done and not fully inform people in order for them to make a decision. I've been doing a lot of research on the IRS. I've already had some knowledge on the IRS. I've done some research in the past and went down a lot of rabbit holes over the past 5 days. And some of them didn't come up with anything, but I had to trace down these rabbit holes to see what they were talking about and what they really meant by the original codes that they may quote in order for enforcement, for instance. They claim they have enforcement powers. They claim a lot of things. So that has taken up a lot of time. We're going to be doing something with the IRS. It's going to be very interesting in what we've put together. We will be posting this information up on our website, and then we will not only announce it, we'll send out emails, and we'll give locations of where this information is. But generally, it's going to be under the grand jury, and it'll be under the tab indictment consideration. And what's there right now is the last information on the last indictment that we considered. But we're going to be considering indictments concerning the IRS, the commissioner of the IRS, and many, many agents, and also tax courts, where these federal district court judges are sitting in on these tax courts. And it's nothing but a facade, given the appearance of a court of law, given the appearance of a judge that has the authority to rule over the people in that court, given the appearance of common law, a court of record, given the appearance of a grand jury indictment, given the appearance of a trial jury. All of it is an appearance. And so I'm going through a lot of that stuff. We're going to be posting that up on the website. Again, underneath grand jury, it'll be in posted under indictment considerations. We will send out emails to inform people, and we'll announce it next Monday also again, but we'll send out emails giving the people the details and where they can find this information. The other thing we're going to be doing is with the IRS, we're also going to, as I mentioned at first, the militia and the Second Amendment. We need to stop these people. They're totally out of control. And the law is clear. Not only the law, the Constitution is clear, but even legislated law is very clear on what these people can do and say anywhere when they have power and authority in office. They cannot aid and abet the enemy. They cannot teach. They cannot bring people together to form an assault upon our Constitution by using their elected positions. They cannot do that. That is a crime. We're going to lay that out, bring all that information together, and then we're going to take it up for consideration of indictments on numerous people. Now, Rudy Giuliani has announced, and I started watching this before I came on the program tonight. He announced a podcast that he's starting. It started today, and it's going to go for 2 weeks. I don't know if you've been watching the news over the past weekend. He came out with some really, really big bombshells. he's really laying out some of these crimes, and he's going to be using this podcast over the past couple of weeks in order to lay out all the information of his investigation that he has found over the past years, actually, that he's been searching and digging into this. And he's going to be laying it out in the course of 2 weeks. I presume he's going to do five a week. I don't know. Maybe he's going to do seven. But he did say it's going to take about 2 weeks. So it's going to be 10 to 12 YouTube videos. They're less than an hour, about 40 minutes, at least the ones that I just recently was looking at. I think it was 40 minutes or 45 minutes, something like that. Definitely less than an hour. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a page for that, and we're going to post those podcasts on that page as he goes through this. And that's going to be for a consideration of an indictment on the individuals that he brings up. The timing is perfect for this. And so, of course, once we go through all this and consider indictments on the people, we'll make a list of the names of the people that he's mentioning and the charges against them, and we'll bring it up for indictment. Now, that particular indictment we're probably going to have to consider Thursday, but Thursday after, because as he said, it's going to take 2 weeks to get it out. So anybody who's going to be involved in that, on the consideration for an indictment, you should be trying to catch up to this on a daily basis, so you're not stuck watching, 12, 15, 20 hours of video to try to catch up. So you should be watching it every day. But again, we will have these YouTube videos on our website underneath Grand Jury. We'll notify you the name of the tab when we actually post it. So we're looking at the militia and Second Amendment, Rudy Giuliani, the IRS. We're also putting together something on the pharma, all the pharmaceuticals, the shots, and all the different things that they're involved with that's really poison. I'm hoping to get that information together over the next week and get that up there. We may approach that at the same time we approach the consideration for indictment when we consider with Giuliani. Unless we can get it up quick enough. I mean, right now it's been a pretty big job to pull the IRS stuff together, which I think we pretty much have it all together now. We do have a lot of the stuff pulled together already on the militia and some of these people that are using their office to destroy our Bill of Rights and of course, the Constitution itself. Of course, the Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution. It's the capstone. But in any event, so hopefully I'll get that done reasonably quick, and then maybe I can get the farmer up there. There was someone else that did a lot of research for that. I haven't looked at it yet, but hopefully it's sufficient enough to be able to put up there and give people enough information to consider indictments on certain individuals. let me see what else we have. So we have farmer, we have the IRS, we have Rudy's work, and we've got the militia. Now, we are also writing a very special paper to the United States Supreme Court. As a matter of fact, we're writing papers on all of these issues directly to them. They're responsible for this, particularly the problem with the Second Amendment and of course, with the IRS problems. They have permitted a destruction of our republic, a destruction, a war against our Constitution, against our Bill of Rights. They have permitted this to just flow from their federal district courts. The United States Supreme Court is responsible for the actions of the federal district courts. They have the power of writ mandamus to order these judges to be obedient or to discharge them ultimately for bad behavior. Congress also has that power and authority, but they're totally lost in so much stuff that we're not going to get them to do anything. So it's now the job of the United States Supreme Court. And if they don't do it, we will be doing it. As a matter of fact, we've already started doing that to get rid of a lot of these federal district judges that are in bad behavior and just don't care about the oath that they've taken. And we haven't been able to file the indictment that we did about a week or so ago, but we'll be putting that paperwork together too this week, and we'll get it up there as soon as we can. We'll make the announcements as we post these different indictments or potential indictments, but we do have an indictment already approved and ready to write up and put up there. We've done the New York SAFE Act lawsuit for people in New York here, and then we moved it into federal court for cause, and they did forfeit the case. We're going to do an affidavit of default. We're not going to do an affidavit of default. We're going to do a paper with a seal by the grand jury concerning the fact that they defaulted, and we're going to use that also as we work with the Second Amendment thing and also deal with a lot of the problems and issues that have taken place down there in Virginia. We've collected a lot of information concerning that. And again, we're going to put information together for potential indictments. The biggest problem we have, and we do address it in all of our papers on a regular basis now, is Rule 2. Rule 2 is something that the United States Supreme Court was responsible for writing the rules of the court, rules of civil and criminal procedures. And through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, Congress gave the authority to the Supreme Court to write the rules. Now, first of all, Congress doesn't have the authority to give anyone else their job to legislate. But on the other hand, these are rules, it's not legislation, and of course the Supreme Court should understand their procedures and processes and problems and situation better than anyone else, so it makes sense to allow them to write the rules. But they need to write them responsibly. Rule 12 is a major problem for most of us, which once we get our courts of law open, we don't have to worry about that anymore, because the rules of the court don't apply to the people. It doesn't apply to courts of law, it applies to courts of equity. The rules of common law applies to the courts of law, and anybody who would like to know about the rules of common law, you can go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight education, come down to weekly topics, and how far down is this? Okay, it's 1, 2, 3. It's the fourth one down. Rules of common law courts. So, rules of common law courts are self-evident truths. That's what rules of courts are. Rules of common law is. There's numerous main principles. For instance, innocent till proven guilty. That's a common law principle. That's a common law maxim, and that has been established as the law of the land here in the United States. But there are lots of, do no harm. I mean, that's the key. If you want to obey all common law, it's very simple. It's under do no harm. Harm nobody, and you have broken no laws. Another one, if someone is guilty, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. If there's no injured party, there is no crime. For every injury, for every person that is injured, for every injury, there must be a remedy. It cannot not be, that there is no remedy. Now, of course, the federal district courts and also state courts, town courts, village courts, they care nothing about these things. They violate us all day long. Anybody who hasn't been in the courts may not know this, but those of us who have been in the courts, we understand how serious this problem is. The Constitution has no longer been being held up. Rule 2 abrogated the common law. Again, I spoke about the Rules Enabling Act, which gave the ability for the Supreme Court to write the rules, and they wrote Rule 2, and they even interpreted it on their website. And we've got this in our paperwork that people will be able to read, but it abrogated the common law and thereby the Constitution. It fused together equity and law and called it civil law. So we're under Roman law. Matter of fact, if you speak to lawyers, they'll tell you they're under Roman law. They also recognize the word Justinian. Okay, so they'll say, yeah, we're under that. Roman law, Justinian law. So therefore, we are under Babylonian law. We are under the law of man. And that's what they have done. And when they moved us to there, they abolished the Constitution. And that's why when we go into courts, and again, people who are not in the courts, maybe you're starting to see some problems, and but they haven't had any experience in the courts, they don't know that when you bring up your unalienable rights, that they're ignored by the court. The court doesn't care about your Fifth Amendment right of due process. The courts do not care about your right to be armed. They don't care about the right of the people to muster together for the militia, to be the militia. They don't care about any of these things. They care about maintaining the status quo and making sure they get their pockets stuffed with loot. And that's about it. These courts, every one of these federal district courts, there are 94 federal districts, and there are quite a few courts in each one of these districts usually. Each one of these federal districts, they have a tax court. And there's nowhere in the Constitution that gives them the power or the authority to have a tax court. They call it an Article I court. There is no such animal as an Article I court. It doesn't exist, okay? Article III court, which is law and equity, that's it. What they refer to as an Article I court is the power and the authority of Congress to create tribunals, okay? So in other words, create district courts and get the judges into these courts. And that's the authority for them to go forward to write the necessary legislation for the authority and powers given in Article III concerning equity particularly. There's nothing for them to write concerning courts of law. That's common law. We're under the rules of common law. It operates by the people, and there is no judge that sits in there. There's no political animal that makes any decisions. There's only a magistrate who has no power or authority to rule on anything, to make any decision. He's just a traffic cop, and they are just to make sure that things move along in a good order and manner, and then at the end of the day, to make sure that he administrate the will of the jury and make sure he puts a seal and a signature and puts it forward to the sheriff or whatever for execution. And that's about the only thing. And, of course, the judge swears in, makes sure the witnesses are sworn in. So that's about it with them. And, of course, they've taken control of everything. They've taken control of our grand juries. They've taken control of our trial juries. They've taken control. They've concealed the true grand juries. They've concealed the true trial juries. They've concealed courts of law. They're not there. You can't find them. There's no paperwork that you can check the box on and say, I want a court of record, which is a court of law, which says no judge is allowed. All of that is not possible. Well, that's what we're all about here, and this is our fight here, to make sure we bring back these things, bring back the Constitution, and also to work to establish the regular militia and also the reserve militia. So there are two militias, and we want to construct them both at the same time from the grassroots in every county across this nation. And we'll be talking more and more about that as time goes on, but I just wanted to bring that out as a general thing. Let's see. Okay, so anyway, we do need everyone to get involved. People need to be involved in what we're doing here. We've got committees going. We need people to join these committees. Maybe people got ideas of other committees that we can do. We need to keep putting the pressure on the courts. We're going to be filing a lot of papers soon, a whole bunch of papers real soon. We've been trying to file at least one a week. It's been kind of difficult to do, but we got a lot of projects and a lot of things, and we're going to have like about five or six papers to file probably in the next week or two. So we'll be hitting the courts with a lot of things. And remember, the whole thing is about pressure. It's about putting pressure of the truth to keep surrounding them, going around them like the Jews did going around the walls of Jericho and blowing the horn, you know, blowing the horn of truth, letting them know what the law is, letting them know that we know they're breaking the law, you know, putting their sin on paper and nailing it to their door. And that's what we're doing. And we've been doing that for quite some time. We've had our court case open for 2 years. And on April 14th, we went into the position of orders a decision and orders. And we've been putting out decisions and orders, and we've putting forward, again, indictments and papers accusing and so on. And we've notified the United States Supreme Court on many occasions, and every paper we notify them with the same thing, you know. We still have the olive branch out for them. But the moment the deep state goes down and their protection is no longer there, they have no rock to hide under, they have no place to hang their hat, they have no one to keep them above the law, they're now going to be under the law. Now they're going to have to make a decision on where they're going to stand, if they're going to stand with the enemies of liberty or they're going to stand with the people. And when that happens, that's who we'll see, and we'll give them opportunity to stand with us. And those who don't, we will file indictments. Well, we have to come together and consider those indictments, of course, and whatever we agree upon, we will file. We will go after the United States Supreme Court justices, all nine of them, if necessary. But I got to believe they're pretty much, most of them are stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they're doing the best they can. But once that pressure's off them, and they no longer need to maintain the status quo for fear of death and many other things, then, of course, we'll deal with these problems, and we'll see who's who at that point in time. And I think that's coming up real, real quick. So, we're taking the papers, we're laying the problems and the situation and the fault at the feet of the United States Supreme Court, and we are nailing our papers to the door. And we will continue to do so and look for that critical mass that we continue to look for. We've got over 8,000 members now, but we will be looking for that critical mass to take us to that next step. And I should hope that hopefully will happen at the same time that the deep state is going down. We've been invited to a couple of interviews, one interview particularly that's kind of new, and this could be a major thing for us to get the word out of what we're doing to a major group of people who are already reasonably educated in things, but are not aware of what we're doing and what we've put together, and I should hope that they'd look at us and find what we're doing very interesting, and that will help us to build up our numbers pretty quickly. Okay, let me see what else we have here before we go to some questions or announcements. Okay, first, before we go to questions, do we have announcements? I don't know if Chuck wants to make any statements or anything. Or if there's anyone else, Jan, for announcements?
I haven't gotten any announcements from Chuck or anybody. We're still looking for, I think it's four leaders for the committeemen district group. And it would be nice to fill those out. Have you put the map up yet, John, on the website?
No, I haven't. You're going to have to pressure me on that during the week here. It only takes me a few minutes to get it up, so.
Sure. Yep.
I just got to remember to do it when I have the time to do it, you know?
Right.
But anyway, we'll get it done. What page do you want to put it on?
Well, with the committee man, I would assume.
Okay.
Hang
right.
In there somewhere. It's pretty well filled, but maybe find a place to tuck it.
Oh, yeah, we'll get it there.
We need Region 5, 6, and 7, which are in the middle of the country. They're right straight down from North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin. That's District 5. District 6 runs Kansas, Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and District 7 is Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And we may have found someone for number 1, which is Washington, Oregon State, and Alaska. And other than your last two Patriot soapboxes, they're announced in the newsletter from January 12th and January 19th. So people can go to the website, listen under radio and TV interviews.
Yeah, I was on again the 26th yesterday.
Okay, good.
So I don't know if you can get up there and post that one too.
Yeah, as soon as we get it, we can post it.
Okay.
We'd like to start a new committee called the Word Committee, which stands for Reach Out, or Word Outreach Daily, Word Committee, to try and get more people, get more interviews for John and Gerard. And we have Rosalyn going to keep an eye on that. She started work on it. We could use one or two other people if they would like to volunteer. And, of course, we can always use more volunteers for the Welcome Committee. Anybody who wants to volunteer for the Welcome Committee, any of these, just give me an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll be very happy. And that's all I have for announcements, John. We do have 5 pages of questions since we terminated questions early last week.
All right, well, we're going to try to catch up on some of them in a minute. But
okay.
What else? I wanted to bring up something. Look at the committee man. I've been so bogged down, I haven't really been able to pay much attention to the committee man things. And I put a lot of pages up there. We did get, first let me jump back to some courses. You know, most important course that people need to take that really prepare them for anything and everything is our Consent of Government course. And it's a pretty lengthy course. It's a very in-depth course. And once you get through that, I promise you will not be bored by that course. You will find a lot of you will see and find a lot of fascinating things that you never realized and knew before. By the time you get to the end of that, you will be fully informed on who we are as a people, our heritage, how we got here, and a really good, strong look at the Constitution. Starting with the foundation of all of our law is the Declaration of Independence, and then, of course, the Constitution itself and its capstone Bill of Rights. And we do go through that point by point try to give some history and some of the debates and arguments that took place, and the final solutions, what they came up with, of course, is the Constitution. So we have that course. It's an extremely important course that should be first and foremost on everyone's list. But we also have a civics course. The civics course is quite lengthy also. It's about 120 hours. Most of it is video and audio, and then some questions as you go along. And that's a pretty darn good, interesting course. If you ever wondered how we got to where we're at, it's in that course. We have, I think, something like... I think he's got about 17 or 18 documentaries done by help me out with the...
Griffin.
G. Edward Griffin. And those documentaries are really eye-openers. But anyway, that is all part inside of our civics course, and we have a really good, history professor, and we've got quite a few lectures by that individual, and I believe it's more than 10 lectures. And it really covers quite a bit of American history. It's going to give you a lot of information. This is information we need in order to be able to. Have government by consent. We the people need to understand who we are as a people, what our heritage is, what our Constitution says, in order that we can make sure that the people going into office know this also and honor their oath, and we watch them. The other thing we're working on is the Committeeman Project, and I have fallen behind on that, but we did get a lot of stuff up there. We got pages, a lot of information, how to fill out the petitions. It's called designating petitions. What we have not got done yet, and I'm going to pressure the people if you're listening right now, I'm going to pressure you tomorrow. Francine, make sure this is for one of the first things I do when you get up tomorrow, is to focus in on getting these calendars together. We need these calendars, these election calendars. We need to get them up on our website. We need to create a list so people know when they're running for committeeman. And then I need to also create another page of information that really gives some details and warnings and plans on how to approach things. And again, anybody running for committeeman, and everybody should be running for committeeman, Everybody should run for committeeman at least once in their life, and we need thousands of people now, so everybody should be running for committeeman. Let's take control of our nation on the grassroots level. That's what the committeeman is all about. It takes control of the politics, gets rid of the politics, it takes control of the political process. We dump out the politics, we don't need that no more, and we will insist on that once we can take control of the entire nation from the grassroots level, from every election district in America. And all these people need to be trained, and that's what the Government by Consent course is all about. Also, of course, our civics course. People need to be getting ready for that, getting involved, and let's take control of the people that we put into office. Remember, the committee men, they're the ones who decide to go, who goes on the ballot or not, and we can require statesmen only who know the Constitution and take their oath serious, or take a hike, or we'll pull you out of office if you lie to us. It's that simple. That's government by consent. Without that, we are not consenting to our government. Same thing in the courts. We're building administrations. Four people in every county paid. These are paid positions, by the way, for the administrators. Committeeman is not a paid position. It's about 40 hours a year, most of that time around the election time, particularly the primaries. And so it's not a lot of work, but it's a very rewarding job, and it's what we must do in order to have government by consent. We need to teach our children to do this. The administrators, on the other hand, that's a paid position, full-time job. They will get to orientate the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries, and bring them in, make sure that they are not poisoned by the judge or any kind of a prosecutor or lawyers or whatever, the courts themselves. This administration must be separate from the courts, non-political. It's made up of the people, we the people. But again, it's a full-time job, so there is a salary with that. The training requirements for these things is to take our courses. That's pretty much it. We will have handbooks, and we will also always be here to answer questions that people will come up with and find new things, and we can give them answers and thoughts and ideas and work these problems out together. And if we don't have an answer, we'll find it. We'll search it out. We'll research it out, and we will bring it to the people. And and one other thing, we're also, as you mentioned a little earlier, we're building the militias. Look at the National Reserve is controlled by the federal government. I don't even know how much control the state governors have on these things. I'm sure they're broken up by the states, but I don't know. In any event, we need to work to build up the militia, what's called the regular militia. There's the regular militia and the reserve militia. Now, every single person, every single able-bodied male, okay, should join the militia. You can join on two sides. You can join as part of the regular militia, or you can join on the side of the reserve. Now, remember, the regular militia is not going to really be the regular militia until it gets to a certain point, a certain size. But meanwhile, we can be organizing, we can be training and working things out. And until we get to a certain point, a certain number within each counties, which then that militia would be a approach the state legislature and the governor for them to exercise the right of the people to have a regular militia. Hopefully the people that are in the National Guard maybe will merge over into that, but we want to get something more constitutional and more under state control than federal control. So that's something we're trying to work with as we go through. And now there's also the reserve militia, and that's a lot more relaxed. There's a minimum amount of requirements. There's a lot of things that you could do, and either the regular or the reserve can do everything. Whatever activities are going on, there may be weekly activities or monthly activities, and certain things that happen yearly, and everyone can come to it if they can. It'll be a requirement for the regular to go to certain things, but not necessarily for the reserve. But there will be a minimum requirement for the reserve, and we're still working that out. But again, everybody needs to join the reserve. Shame on us if we don't join that reserve. Shame on us. So go, you know, click the button. You'll find the People's Duty on our blue bar, and you'll find all the information you need on committeemen. There are four pages up there right now. You'll find all the information you need on the militia. There are three pages up there right now for that. We have a course under courses. We have a militia, the several state course, and that follows Brent Winter's book called The Militia of the Several States, which we took that book, the booklet, and we put it together as a course and asked questions as each sections. And it's a drag and drop questions, you know, the list of answers on the side, and you drag and drop it into the right place and you move on, so on. In any event, and then, of course, we have the information on becoming a jury administrator. Anybody wants to become a jury administrator, all that information is found under the People's Duty. Again, we'll be posting another page on the committeeman as soon as we get the information on the calendars, which will give the dates that people will be needed to walk their designating petitions and filing them. let me see what else we have before we move to questions. So we got a lot of things going on, and people need to get involved. Shame on us if we don't get involved. If we lose our nation and we don't take it back, it's because the people decided not to take it back. They decided not to step up. They decided not to have government by consent anymore. So it's up to you to do what has to be done.
Hey,
and do not think that the other guy is doing it, because I'm here to tell you, he's not. You're the other guy. Jan?
John?
Oh, Gerard.
Gerard. Yeah, I got something I'd like you to maybe comment on. Well, I got two things. I want to put them out there before we go to questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, actually, Brent can probably answer, and I see that he is here. If the militia gets activated, do they draw a salary just like the regular service? That's something that, you know.
Only when they get activated, they draw a salary.
Right. So they get a salary just like they would if they were in the Army or the Marines or something like that. Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
The other thing is I know you watched Rudy Giuliani's first podcast.
Yeah, I started watching. I didn't get to see all of it, hear all of it.
Oh, well, in there, he talks about that when it comes down, once the both sides get to here and, you know, in the Senate and make their arguments, that it's up to Trump's side to make a motion to dismiss the charges under Rule 12, because no actionable cause of the four things that you can impeach for, which are written in the Constitution.
Yeah, a failure to state an action.
Action, right. Yeah. And he says if they don't do that, he said they lose that opportunity forever. And what he's afraid of, he said, look, a long trial would be great because all these crimes could be brought out. But he says it's really not the right place to do it, because what happens is if you go to a trial, what you did is you just blessed them putting these bogus charges through for impeachment. Now you forever changed the way impeachments could be done, and they could use it for all kinds of crazy stuff. He said it's better not to go to a trial. Let it get dismissed under Rule 12 for failure to state. He said because otherwise you're going to water down the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very easy for them to try to impeach somebody over all kinds of myriad of baloney. So this is a very important decision in order to protect what Hamilton wanted, which was he wanted to have impeachment, but he didn't want any group or group of people to be able to become like a dictator with it. And that's why they, you know, they keep saying, oh, they have unlimited power. No, they don't. They only have four things that they can impeach for, so that's the limit right there.
Right, and impeachment must be bipartisan.
Right, which it wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't bipartisan, and they didn't give them, I mean, there's a lot of things wrong.
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, there's no way they're going to be able to impeach him. You know, I understand what Giuliani is saying. I kind of agree with that kind of thinking. But then there's the other side of the coin, the opportunity to get things in front of the people and to really get it out there. And then he gets, you know, then he gets his State of the Union to really finish off that job, so to speak. He can push that away a little further. I'm not sure when that is due.
But you see,
I thought it was the end of January. Huh?
If you don't make a timely objection, you lose the opportunity. And
well, that's true. That's true. But remember, I don't think that starts until you start the trial. Okay, look at right now, they're just making their positions.
No, he's saying that once they make their positions and before you go to a trial, you look at when if you want a summary judgment, if you want to dismiss because failure to state a cause of action, they don't start a trial. That's at the beginning before you start. That's the very first motion. That is the trial. The first motion made in the trial is dismissed for failure to state a valid cause of action, right? So, look, if Trump and Giuliani want to get this stuff in front of the people, there's other venues they can do it in. They should not have to depend on an impeachment trial to get this stuff out.
Right.
We're the grand jury. They should send it to us.
Well, that's true. And we're gonna do it. That's why we want to take what Giuliani has to say, all the evidence that he lays out, and consider indictments on all these people.
Well,
he makes a good point, and I kind of sort of agree with him. I'm hearing some other logic or things that the administration wants to go a different way with this and really take this through the trial. But I don't think there's a real danger because, remember, in order for them to get a conviction, they need two-thirds of the House. So that's never going to happen. Okay,
no,
that's number one.
I think the danger is giving them the authority to pull this monkey business.
But this has the opportunity for the people to see what's going on and to understand, the serious problems. But again, I really don't know the plan anyway.
He's got a bully
pulpit
now. Whatever
Trump does,
He's doing his podcast. He can bring it all out. He's a special prosecutor. He investigated.
The people listen. Okay, right now I saw when I went out there was 800 hits already, and that's pretty good because it just came out an hour or two ago. It just came out, so that's not bad at all. So some people are paying attention, and if he gets the big hits, of course that'll be good. Anyway, I don't know which way it's going to go. I can see both ways. I kind of agree on both ways. It's hard for me to make a decision. I don't have to make that decision, and I do trust Trump's team, and I think. They're going to make the right decision, and that'll be that. The impeachment doesn't stick. It cannot stick. It's a fraud to begin with, and there is no. And the other thing is they could never find him guilty he's not guilty of any breaking any statutes, any laws. So there's nothing there. I don't know what the plan is, and there's a lot to consider, and we don't even have all that information. But, Giuliani makes some good points, and we're going to watch what he's doing and take some notes and lay out some potential indictments for the people to decide on. So, right, anything else on that?
No, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're ready to move on to questions. Let me just think of a little bit here and look. I don't know if Chuck needs to make any announcements or anything. If you do, hit *6, get into the queue, and we'll pull you right up front for that. But anybody else has any questions or comments, they can get into the queue, *6. And so when we open up for Q&A, you'll be in the queue. Okay, let's take some questions. I don't want to get too long-winded on this, but what do you got?
Okay, first question. When is a grand jury indictment unsealed? For example, among the several hundreds of thousands of sealed indictments, is it based upon when they were filed or the nature and severity of the charges which determines the order?
Well, I think in the case of what they've got hidden there and, still sealed is because they're still running investigations and they don't want to let the cat out of the bag. Usually that's why indictments are usually sealed. They're still, these indictments spring off other potential indictments and what happens here get more and more. And so that's probably one of the reasons. The other reason, I think, also is the Justice Department's also, and of course the administration, understands the sensitivity of these cases and to make sure that this is done in a proper order and at the right time so it doesn't look like that's a coup, okay, because that's a problem because that's what they're trying to set up to make it look as the patriots, the people, are, you know, that are up for Trump, and you know, that they're the ones making the coup and is going to arrest them and do these things, you know. So it's a very sensitive and touchy subject, and you know, the best thing we could do is trust the plan, as Q always tells us, trust the plan. And remember, you know, Sessions was a good guy, and the point was recently made by Q, you know, that, you know, Sessions did his job. He, you know, he was working on lots of indictments all that time for the couple of years that he was doing what he was doing. So, you know, I don't know, as far as what we're doing, okay, we're not sealing our indictments. The moment we decide them, we post them as soon as we can write them, and we file them everywhere we can, and we send it to the Justice Department for them to execute the indictment, prosecute it, and then it's up to them to go forward with it.
Hey, John, didn't we have sealed indictments in the Finicum case because there were certain people we didn't want to reveal?
No, because we did the indictments all at the same time. Nothing was sealed. Right. It's all revealed. All the names are up there. I think there was 25 people we indicted in that. So all that is up on our website under grand jury. You'll find the
indictment. But we didn't. I don't think we revealed all the witnesses in the ones making the claims. There was something that we held back as the grand jury, and we didn't give to them because we felt that it would put, just like the whistleblower, need to stay anonymous. We had certain people that gave us information. Like in an indictment, you have a right to know who your accuser is. Mm-hmm. And I thought we held some of that stuff back until the until such time that there would be a trial or that person had to actually testify.
Yeah.
And some of that we would even do under secret testimony, maybe, without revealing their.
I don't remember. We had a lot of evidence on that one. That was a big case, and we posted everything we had up there, and so on. And you know, when we do our indictments. You know, there are certain things we probably should have done as far as announcing, and we will announce it this time. We might have done it in the beginning, but the last indictment we didn't do it. And but we're going to read a few things, and this is a couple of things we're going to read. Let me just do this right now. let's see. The grand jury is not gathered to debate innocence or guilt, but only to hear and decide if there is probable cause to believe that a crime occurred and the target of the proceedings committed it. The evidence of a possible crime is thereby offered to the grand jury for them to decide. It is incumbent upon everyone who participates as a grand jurist to view the evidence presented below or on the page before the assembly. There will be no debate before the grand jury vote. If we debate the details, then we are considering the options of others for innocence or guilt, and not the evidence as one sees it. So we need to rule on the evidence. We're not there to, you know, come together and make a debate and an argument so we can come with a consensus or anything. No. The grand jury can ask questions. Okay, we're not set up in a way that we have that opportunity. If we did have some people that we'd want to quiz, we can ask them questions, of course, and then they'll answer those questions. But the grand jury doesn't debate. They don't decide innocence or guilt. They just look at the evidence, say, hey, something smells here. We need to indict, and we believe that's the guy. You know, so. That's what the grand jury is. The other thing is to announce the information. Anybody coming in spying, or if they're a government agent, they don't belong in there, it's a crime. If we find out, we will indict you. Anybody goes into the grand jury and to spy on the grand jury and comes out and start bad-mouthing the grand jury about any of the issues that took place, we will indict that person. Well, I can't say we're going to indict them. We will bring them up for indictment. But I'm sure we will get indictments for those people. So those are two announcements, and plus the reading of that paragraph that we will do every time we go forward with grand jury, so people don't get confused and understand what it is we're doing. We're not there to debate innocence or guilt. We're not there to convince each other of anything. We're there to look at the evidence and make a decision, ask questions if possible, and then make a decision. And that's it. Now, the trial jury is a whole different ballgame, okay, you know, they get to come together and really, you know, chew it up and debate it, and we're trying to convince each other, and they're trying to get a consensus if they're trying to get a guilty, to, you know, or innocent. Okay, let's leave that aside. Let's go back to questions.
Jim? Okay. Under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution for the United States, can states make their laws to whatever they're liking? For example, the state of Virginia with the anti-gun legislation, can they use the 10th Amendment to justify their authority in this manner?
No. You know, well, one of the things, when the state came into the Union, any state that comes into the Union, they come under the Constitution for the United States, which is the law of the land. I think that's Article 6, if I recall. And, well, maybe it's 5. Well, let me see. Let me go look at that. Hang on a second. I'd like to remember what article it is. Yeah, Article 6, okay, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. So anything that is repugnant to the Constitution, anything that is contrary to the Constitution for the United States, whether it's a constitution of a state or whether it's a law by the legislators of that state, it's null and void. So no, they cannot create any law that is in opposition to the Constitution. Neither can any state create any law, and of course the Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution. So you can't make any law that either creates a permit in order to exercise a right, like a gun permit or a driver's license, the right to travel. That cannot be done. They've done it. We need to deal with that and fix that problem. But we can't do it right now. But they don't have that power and authority to do that, nor do they have the power and authority to take away an unalienable right, the right to be armed. So no state can do that. You know, there was a big issue with Lincoln, President Lincoln, and the Civil War. And, you know, I think I can debate either side of that, the right of the states versus the right of the federal government to do what they did, and vice versa. But I think the right thing happened. Unfortunately, you know, the enemy used that in order to leverage themselves in different ways, like with the 14th Amendment and other things. But in any event, the bottom line on that whole issue is that the federal government did have the authority and the duty to protect the unalienable rights of the people within states. And the slavery was a major problem. I know they say that slavery wasn't the major thing that really caused the Civil War. I think it was the underpinning part of this whole thing, and it really didn't come to surface until a little later into the war that was really what it was all about. But the bottom line is the federal government did have a duty to protect the unalienable rights of the people, in this case the black people who were as slaves. And for that reason, it was a lawful thing. It could have been done away with. It could have been dealt with in a peaceful fashion. There was a couple of thoughts and ideas that could have prevented the war. But really, the enemy of liberty had their fingers into it, and they made sure it became a bloody war. But that's past, done and gone, and over with. And I think it ended up the right way, with the exception of some really bad law, particularly the interpretation of the 14th Amendment.
Well, the main reason for the war wasn't slavery. That was just thrown in there. It was politics.
It was an economic thing. It was a lot of
economics. That's right. Yeah. They care. You know, they threw the slave thing in because, actually, at the time that Lincoln made the Emancipation Proclamation, the North was getting whacked pretty bad. He thought it would help, which it did a little bit. You know what I mean? It was sort of more political, like I said, economic. That, they always make believe. They always say, "Oh, the war between the states was about slavery." It really wasn't. It was more to do about economics and commerce between the states. And you know, the North's making a lot of money. The South was doing all the work. We could sit here and debate it, but I mean, the South actually had a a valid beef with the North over that, but it didn't get worked out.
Well, I agree. They did have a valid beef, and you know, again, like I said, I can make positions on both sides. Mm-hmm. But on the bottom line, at the end of the day, the end results of the Civil War was the liberation of the slaves. And that being the case, it was the will of God for that to happen on the one hand. On the other hand, you look at, we're paying for that, and we're paying for abortion. Slavery and abortion, the two major sins of America. And we're paying for that. The wrath of God has been upon us for a long time. Only recently has he been giving us relief and hope, and actually, I think, prophecy to see how this thing's going to end. But in any event, back into the Civil War, the end results was the freedom of slaves, and that was key. This nation could not continue under those situations, under those terms. We were a contradiction. You know, you had the Declaration of Independence, and then, of course, you know, you have the preamble to the Constitution. All destructive. Slavery, you know, the idea of having slavery was destructive to those things, and it was a contradiction. So even though it was an underpinning thing, because it played, you know, slavery played a major role in the economy of the South, and it turns out it really did as much, but in any event, it in the day it did, and so the economics of this whole thing was a major thing of it also. Jefferson really worked hard to stop this, and he knew that one day it would come to play. And he did what he can to make sure that day would happen. So he put a lot of work into this to get to the issue of dealing with the slaves. But he knew in his day he couldn't. He just was unable to settle that. It was too much of a divide. So, but anyway, what else have we got out there, Jan?
Has the NLA ever considered getting the NRA involved in the gun case?
Well, you know, I don't know too much about the NRA as an organization. Gerard, you probably know more about them than I do.
Gun Owners of America would be better. Yeah. Jews for the Preservation of Iron. Look, the NRA, as far as I'm concerned, is a sham organization. There's lots of good people in it, but they're always making concessions, and they're always taking the money and spending it, you know, in ways that they're not getting results, and they're always... Like I said, they're making... Let's open the dialogue. It's like, come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. They have done more damage to us than good. You know, organizations like Gun Owners of America, you go and see the head guy of that and listen to what his beef is and what he distills the problem down, which is, you know, no toleration for no law. Congress shall make no law. The NRA is not there. They're not even close to that. Well, we'll have some discussion. You know, they're bad. I'm sorry. They just are.
But with that being said, you know, the leadership is one thing and the membership is another thing, and they may not realize
they got good members. They got a good organization, and they're wasting it. If they could if they could team up with the Gun Owners of America, they would be good. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just the way it is. Look, the members should know, I left the NRA. I was with them for many, many years, and I left them, and I joined the Gun Owners of America. And there's other good groups out there. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms, they're a very good group. They do some really good lobbying for really constitutional law. The NRA is not based in the Constitution enough. They can't argue because they don't even know it. I'm not talking about the membership. I'm talking about the leadership. They're rubbing elbows up there on the top, drinking wine and having too much fun or something. But there's a problem with them. There just is, and they need to be redone somehow, because they're not constitutional enough. They're just not.
And with that said, again, you know, if we have the opportunity to address their membership, we definitely would seize that opportunity. So if anybody thinks that they can arrange an opportunity for us to address their membership. Or they got magazines out and stuff, and maybe they can do an interview, and if they're honest and get it out there, what we're doing and how people can step up and learn to save the nation. Because only the people can save the Republic. Only the people. President Trump can't do it. He can set the stage and lead us, but it's up to the people to take the power and the authority. And if they fail to do that, someone else will, because the power vacuum is there, and someone has to fill it. So we the people will fill it on the grassroots, both in the political process and the courts, or they will fill it and we'll just be back here again in so many years. Next question.
Can people with legal disabilities or convictions participate in a militia in the eyes of the Constitution?
Well, look at people with disabilities. If they can do whatever they want and do whatever they can do, that would be fine, I would guess. But you know what? I need to think about felons. First of all, I don't know that we have really many felons. Most people, well, look at a lot of people probably are guilty of a lot of things that have gone through courts. But then there's a lot of people that are not guilty of things and they've been called felons. So it's a hard one to decide on. My thinking was, is once you've paid the toll, so to speak, you know, it's the old Western type of world idea that we're used to. That we see in movies and things, you know, when the cowboy gets out of jail, they give him his saddle. Usually the horse is dead, I guess, you know, so he'll get a horse. But, you know, they give him his saddle and his guns back. Now, you need that to survive. You know, that's your vehicle to get around, and that's your protection in the wilderness. You need that weapon, and you need that saddle. Today, to some degree, of course, we still need those two things. We don't want to take any rights away from people once they've paid their price. But we have to be careful. I need to really think some more about how to really, address the issue because, you know, our founding fathers were clear. Once you're a felon, you can't be believed no more. Okay? You cannot get up in a court and make a claim you're a felon. Now, is there any forgiveness of that? Of course there's forgiveness for that. Do you get all your rights back? Well, of course, I think you should get all your rights back, the right to vote, right to travel, and everything else. Does that give you the right to be in a militia? You know, I'm going to leave that question to Brent. I'd have to think that out a bit.
Years have judges in the past. They don't do it so much anymore. But years ago, it was commonplace. In my day, I'm not that old. They would say, either you go to jail for a felony or you join the service. They put all kinds, and those boys turned out good. Look, there's felonies and there's felonies. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, I understand that. So these are difficult things to answer or think about. Look, if you're a convicted felon, okay, especially if you're convicted more than once and you've created some heinous crimes, even 10 years later, you know, for you to come into a court, raise your hand and bear witness to something, you know, the point could be made up that person can't be trusted. They're a convicted felon. Look at the evil they did. Now, of course, people repent and change. You know, how do we give that opportunity? And I'm just thinking here. I'm not making any statements one way or the other. I used to make a flat-out statement, and once you've done the time you've fulfilled whatever the punishment is, then everything's fine after that. But there may be certain cases or certain situations where you're not going to be trusted. So I don't know. Brent, can you pipe in on this one, especially with the militia idea?
If I'm audible, am I audible?
Yep, you're on mute.
Oh,
you're on
good.
Mute. Yeah.
Oh well. Yeah.
Can you comment on any of this?
Oh, I could talk now. The cows come home about that particular question. Number one thing I think of is I defended a lot of people that went to federal prison that weren't felons. They're innocent as the day is long. They just had a disagreement with the government on how much money they owed in taxes. Now, does that make a man unbelievable? And just because you're a felon, if you are a felon, that's just a government label. That's all it is. It doesn't amount to a pinch of dried owl manure in most cases. And even if it did, what one among us is without sin?
Amen.
What one among us is without law-breaking? And there are a lot of folk that can commit heinous crimes that don't go to prison or aren't convicted of felonies. To start with, the people that are sitting in Congress now, the board of the Federal Reserve Bank, and all of those folks that vote in Virginia to take away rights, those are some ugly, dirty, twisted felons. Can they vote? Well, even if, to bring it back a little bit, even if a fella is labeled a felon, and that brings back memories that I know many of us can recall about Chuck Connors and the television show Branded. Remember that show?
Yeah,
I remember.
Branded. Yeah, mm-hmm. that was a military conviction in his case in that story, but the same kind of thing. Once a man's branded by the government, just because he disagrees with the government, does that mean that he's not trustworthy? Well, he's just as trustworthy as the next fella in 99% of the cases. So if
Chuck
he's a
was.
Felon, if he's labeled as a, but yeah, really, if he's labeled as a felon, can he testify on the witness stand? Well, you bet he can. There's nothing in our law that says he can't. The only question is, how is he going to be believed? Well, the prosecutor is going to bring out. Well, actually, let's get down to brass tacks here. Most criminal cases in federal court use felons as their primary witnesses. Amazing.
Yeah, imagine
that's
that.
True, that's true, yeah, all, against other felons, yeah.
They love them the best.
Yeah, that's all they can find. Nobody else is going to help them out.
Yeah.
And I've been in court and watched people come in chains, arms and leg chains, and testify, and the jury, oh, yeah, the U.S. government put them on as a witness. That's our problem. Our problem is not the felons. Of course, once you get a guy in prison and label him a felon, it's easy to get him lie on the witness stand. He'll do anything to protect his family, because if he doesn't testify, and I've seen this, if he doesn't testify the way they want him to testify, they may come and prosecute his wife. Send her to prison. The ugliness is over the blasted top. I want to make one other comment, if I might, about, and can he serve on the militia? Oh, to get to that. Of course he can serve as a militiaman. The militiaman, and somebody asked a while ago, what if you're disabled? What if you're not able-bodied? The militia is for folk to help. The beauty of the militia is every artisan, every man that has a skill, and everybody knows something. I'm going to recommend a book, and this is one of the most profound books I ever read. It was edited and written by General George C. Marshall, and a retiring military officer gave it to me many decades ago. It was published by the Department of Defense at that time. The name of the book is The American Military Officer. The American Military Officer. To read the book isn't to understand. It's not to understand what military life is. The book is about Americanism, and it's about what really counts. And what we discover reading that book, it's just a series of stories about men who are in military service, which is analogous to the militia, because the militia, once called forth by the president, becomes a part of the armed forces of the United States. If called forth by the governor, the militia becomes a part of the armed forces of the state. But the principles apply. It's a story, just list a series of stories about men that came from all walks of life that didn't think they amounted to anything, didn't even know how to brush their teeth. But when they got in situations where the skill they had was important, they became the leaders. Uneducated men. Men that nobody would have given a thought to. I remember reading about this one fellow. His name was Lang. This was in the book, L-A-N-G. He was from Kentucky. He was a hillbilly. And he didn't know how to brush his teeth. His teeth were rotten out of his head, and he was in the Army. And he was in the Philippines. And at the beginning of World War II, the bombs started falling. Even before war was declared, people don't realize there were a lot of hostilities that happened. And all the men he was with froze up. They didn't know what to do. They ran for the bomb shelter, and there were men dying and wounded, laying all around. They were too afraid to go out and drag them back in the bomb shelter. Where they were under the bunker. And this fellow named Lang, who everybody made fun of, who was ignorant, he grabbed a stretcher and he crawled out where the bombs were falling, and he rolled a man over in the stretcher and he drug him back. And then they started laughing about him. They said, look at Lang out there, old Lang. He's a litter drill in the middle of a blasted war. And then they got quiet after they joked about him for a while. And then one of them took a litter and he went out and tried to do the same thing, and pretty soon they were all rescuing the poor men that were bleeding and dying that hadn't gotten to the bomb shelter in time. And another fellow from Oklahoma, he'd worked in the coal mines. He didn't feel like he knew anything. He was ignorant. And when they got into the situation in World War I where there was they had to clear mines, well, this fellow understood explosives, and it didn't shake him up a bit. He could handle explosives. And so when they were clearing the minefields, he became the man that was the leader that could show other men how to relax, how to be careful, how to do the job, even though he didn't understand the technical part of it as much as maybe some of them did. They didn't have the wherewithal to do what had to be done. When it comes to the militia of us, folk here in the States, there are carpenters, there are mechanics, there are doctors, there are nurses. There are all sorts of people from all walks of life that know how to do all sorts of things, and that's the strength of the militia. It's not just a matter of carrying a gun. I know a fellow at home that's disabled, been disabled since he was a kid, and he calls himself a gun nut. He loves guns. He's been collecting guns for years and knives. He can repair them, all of them. He understands them all, and he knows how to fix them. Well, men like that are valuable in a setting where there are militiamen, where there's a need for a man that understands how to repair and keep serviced firearms. So I just make those points to say, yes, everybody can be helpful. But as I always say, and I want to continue to say, the male of the species is the one that will answer. The female of the species can do a lot of things, but she's not obligated to in the same way. That's the great difference. And the two things you had mentioned, the militia, yes. Men, all sorts of men that have skill or that can learn a skill, even if they feel like they don't know one. This is their opportunity to distinguish themselves and learn a skill and be helpful. It's sometimes the most menial jobs become the most important, and all of us that have lived life any length of time have learned that. And then, the thing about felons, there's nothing in the Constitution that says federal government or the state governments have the authority to remove the right to keep and bear arms from felons. But I recognize that there are laws on the books that say that all over the place. That's true.
I think that's a key point. There's nothing in the Constitution that we've written in there for that. And, my position has always been, once they've done their time and fulfilled their whatever the penalty is, and they should be brought back into society. But from reading recently, there were certain positions and thoughts and ideas concerning particularly the, in the court, being trusted in the court, that kind of a thing. So, but I think you clarified and cleared a lot of that stuff up.
And also, I think one of the problems that we have is certain people need the death penalty, and we keep them alive, and we stick them in there forever. And there's certain things that men do that they deserve to die. They let them make their peace and let them leave. Because you would never want to trust some of these heinous murderers, especially a serial killer that has done it more times. Would you want him in your foxhole with your back to him? You couldn't trust him, right? I wouldn't want to be in a hole with him, would you? I mean, there's a guy they should have done away with because he's, to me...
That's what God's law is clear. If a man takes his life by man, his life will be taken.
And so I think we have a lot of these guys roaming around that shouldn't even be standing upright. They should be under the ground, and we wouldn't have to worry about them.
That's true.
But anyway, that's just my opinion.
No, you make a good point. The trouble I see with all that is that due process isn't followed. I mean, it's one thing to say if a man murders another man by malice and aforethought, he needs to be killed. But it's quite another thing to say he needs to be tried, have due process with a full-fledged jury, and let's see what the truth is. And that isn't often...
Well, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Look, we cannot go back to... We cannot have the death penalty as long as our courts are in the shape that they are and they've taken control of everything. We got to get our courts of law back, and only then can we really truly trust in the death penalty when it's up to the people that are untainted in these jury boxes.
Well, they're using statutes. I mean, and they're not making any kind of look. Every case has its own merits, and like Brent says, with malice and forethought, you have to prove that.
All right. Well, let's move on. Go ahead, finish up, and we'll move on.
One comment: would I think that a man next to me, who's unfaithful to his wife, is going to be loyal to me? I think not. That's been my experience. But I just want to throw that in also. There's a lot to think about here. A lot. Loyalty is a big deal. Big deal. Yeah. Well, go ahead, John. I'll be quiet.
All right. Yeah, let's finish up with these questions, and then I'm not going to spend too much more. How many more questions do we have, Jan?
Well, we're almost halfway down the first page of five.
Oh, goodness. That many questions.
We'll be here all night.
Ask me the simple shorties for right now. We'll get rid of a few of them. We'll have to pick back up on Monday. I'll have to make it real short on next Monday and try to get to these questions. But go ahead.
Let's do a few more. Okay. Is there any way to file either a writ or some sort of court order if responder does not respond back or defaults? I do understand different types of writs and so forth, but could not find one.
If someone doesn't respond back to your paper, you file an affidavit of default, period.
Yeah.
They default. I presume he's talking about a paper that they put in the court and the people were supposed to respond, correct?
Let me read the rest. I know for prisoners we can file paperwork and ask the judge and all the parties who are involved. Default for that would be a writ of habeas corpus, but what about breach of contract or fraudulent contract by large corporation or government?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, people in prison, they're totally under the control and the thumb of the judge and the lawyers, so I don't know how to give any advice on that. Even with a notice and demand, you're not even in the court. You start something up with a notice and demand, and you make it clear on what the bottom line and penalty is if they don't answer with X amount of days, usually 30 days. And then you make the affidavit of default, you make the decision, you make the point. And then you can use that to bring it into a court and say, show cause why this I shouldn't have my wherefore clause. You know, after all, we went through all this and you ignored it. And then they can default again, maybe even, who knows. But I don't know, the question is too broad to really get a clear answer. I'm not sure exactly what the question completely is, but next question.
I have a joinder with NLA. Respondents were sent notice of removal in November. I have a letter from the county support agency stating my child support can be reviewed. I am the obligee. After sending in my application, the agency wrote back stating I cannot have my child support reviewed because county CPS court will hold a child support review in April of 2020. What can I do? Or what can I send to the county court about this? What recourse?
Well, we haven't. Once we move the case into our court, and X amount of days has passed by, then we're going to do a decision and order, which we haven't started. We haven't started filing that yet, and we've got quite a few. I don't remember how many, but we do have a number of them that are ready to be filed, and they're getting later and later. And the only reason we haven't is because we're shorthanded and just bogged down. I'm kind of hoping, I tried to get back to this work last week, and I had some time, but we never got to it. We couldn't get all our ducks in a row for me to apply my time there. And now when we're ready to go, I was hit with two or three major things that we have to deal with, so it's kind of on the back burner. But we will be filing those papers soon, maybe next week. And then, when they don't do what has to be done, we'll take it to the next level. We're looking for indictments on these people that are not obeying the law, giving people due process, and it just ignoring the law of the land, not keeping their oaths. And also, maybe we can even do habeas corpuses on top of that. But if they're not going to obey the order, a decision and order, they're probably not, well, the federal judges might be starting to respond to this, too, because we'll put the pressure on all these federal judges. So habeas corpus, after we finish the work we're doing now, a couple of weeks from now, might have a lot more leverage in the federal courts than it has been. But we'll see what happens. Next question.
What is a committeeman?
The committeemen are the people that decide on what who gets on the ballot. It's really that simple. They get to interview the people. That's going to go on the ballot, and they get to decide whether they're going to put them on the ballot or not. Instead of party bosses, the party bosses, private association party bosses, have been deciding that for us for as long as we've been alive, because they've taken control of this for a very long time. We need to take it back. So we need to take the committee man process back. And to learn more about it, go to underneath people's duty, click on all those tabs with committee men, watch the videos, read the information. Come back with more questions, and we're going to have more information up there soon. Next question.
How do we get the militia to become better aware of National Liberty Alliance, Valhalla, and natural law?
Well, got to get them to our front page. Got to get them to see the plan and read through our front page. Maybe listen to some of our interviews, and hopefully we'll get them interested. You know, look at people. A lot of people act out of ignorance. And, you know, we formed a group of people, okay, a lot of our members. We formed the Unified Militia Alliance. That's what it's called, the Unified Militia Alliance, which we're not looking to create any kind of a national leadership or anything. It's just to bring them all together. So National Liberty Alliance has given a place for these people to facilitate for these people, A, an education, B, a place to communicate, and a place to organize specifically within their counties. And we're teaching people to organize on the county levels because that's, you know, the county level is really the breakup point where, because each county has a sheriff. So it's kind of a boundary with a sheriff in it, and for, you know, for the ability to have posse comitatus, usually for the, you know, the the reserved militia. But no way are we looking to have any kind of a national leadership. There will be no national leadership. There'll never be a national leadership. There will not be state leaderships. Or anything like that. It'll always be grassroots from the county level, and it may start in this town and that town, but they need to organize ultimately throughout the entire county. Next question.
Are you familiar with a video by Luke Korn on void judgment?
No. Next question.
Okay.
I don't know what that is, so I guess I gotta go.
Is there a way we could be informed of our place in the queue so that we will be prepared for prompting to contribute?
I don't know. We'll think about it, that, if it can be a way. I'll leave that up to the national leadership to come up with an idea if they can, and we'll see where we go with that. Next question.
How about lettering an affidavit as an affidavit in truth in comparison to an affidavit of truth?
In truth or of truth? Of is possessive, right? You know, like the United States of America, or for America, you know. So, but I don't know. I don't know that it makes a difference. What do you think, Jan? You know more about the English than I would.
I like of, I guess.
Do you see a problem with either one?
No, I think it just reads better as an affidavit of truth. It is an affidavit.
Yeah, I don't see a difference that I can see, but next question.
Do the people need to know about one's right to travel versus one's privilege to drive?
The right to travel is, by any ways, it's the normal means of the day. We don't have horses no more. We have vehicles, motor vehicles. So we drive motor vehicles. We have the unalienable right to get into that vehicle and travel unimpeded. But, you know, we do have a responsibility. You know, I would like to, you know, be part of a spearhead movement once we get into the courts to make a lot of changes in this nation. And one of the things is the problems with the driver's licenses. But we still have to be responsible. I think schools should be liable and responsible to teach children how to handle a gun and fire a weapon, how to drive a vehicle. You know, all that we should be teaching our children. Everybody should know these things. And you know, we have rules of the road. They should be obeyed. And generally speaking, most people do obey the rules of the road, and they're going to continue to obey them. There's a safety. There's a video we have up there. Maybe Gerard can try to remember where it's at and pipe in where it's at, if he can find it. But we have a video up there, The Road to Nowhere. And it shows they eliminated all. I'm being repeated by somebody. Oh, you, Gerard, you got to mute yourself. Yeah, okay. We have a video up there. I think it's called The Road to Nowhere or something like that. And they got rid of all the traffic lights and everything, okay? And the traffic just flowed. And it worked much better with it. The people that thought it was crazy, they thought people would die. They thought there'd be all kinds of problems. They were kind of against it. And after they ran it for, I don't know how long, a couple of weeks or something, a month, I don't know how long they ran it for, they were going to go back to get the lights back up and everything. The people said, no, we like it the way it is. So everybody was yielding and stopping and moving, and everything moved. The pedestrians moved, the traffic moved, everybody yield to each other. Look, it's common courtesy. We don't go and bumping into people and pushing people out of our way and abusing things around us. You know, we're trained up as, in society to yield to people, you know. So, anyway, next.
How many successful cases and or trials do we have in place together at this moment that have created joinder with Valhalla in regards to one's right to travel?
Well, we haven't been too much into the ones with the right to travel. We do have information. People go in and make the battle. I don't know that we've picked up many cases. We might have one or two cases that are in the traffic courts. We don't have a lot of success, but look at winning the battles is not the thing. They're somewhat important, but the key thing is we want to win the war. And so we're on a pressure game. And we got a lot of resistance. These people are hell-bent on just resisting us. They do not want the common law back. They fear the people, okay? When the government fears the people, we have liberty. But they fear the people to come into power. They don't want them there. They don't want runaway juries, grand juries or anything. They don't want people that know they have a right of nullification. They don't want people to be able to get access to their juries. Why? Because they're all criminals in there, and they're breaking the law, and they know if the people come in, they're done and they're going to jail.
It's all about money
and power. And that is what's
going
to happen. Yeah.
Money and power.
And it's going to happen.
You said the normal mode of transportation. They still have the horse listed as the normal mode because they wouldn't be able to control our cars if they had it listed as a car. And let me tell you something. It takes a lot of responsibility to run a horse down a street. You got
to
be.
I used to have 375 horses.
You can kill people with a horse, and you got to watch where he poops and everything else. But they're they used to take care of their horses, as well as we take care of our cars. It's all a bunch of baloney.
I used to have 375 horses under my
wing. That's why you got to be careful.
It's amazing. Anybody look in the old videos where they adjusted the timing of the video movement so it's regular. It looks like it used to be very fast, but they adjusted that because they used to wind it with their hands when they took the videos back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And you look back at the traffic and things, and you wonder how these people survived. And even watching that, you would think there should have been 50 accidents in that 20 minutes of video you're watching, and there are none. People are yielding to each other. They learn to get around things. We are a lot more orderly because, we've got the road structure set up, two ways, one way. We've got certain places you do need lights, like down in New York City. There are certain places you just need them. But generally speaking, stop sign, yield signs should work well. People do what they got to do. Next question.
Who or what may one recommend for someone new to research?
Say what?
They want to know what to research, yeah.
Our website. The whole website.
I didn't get the question. Try it again.
What may one recommend for someone new to research?
Look at. The key thing here is sources. When you get information, you want to know what the source of information is. I get very frustrated when I go seeking out information on the internet, and you get all these people telling you all these things, but they didn't give you their source. Where did the source come from? I got to look deep down into this and find out what the source is, and that's true for everything. And so we do put together a lot of sources. Everything we do, we give a source. But if you go to our front page right there, we have the NLA plan. That's where it begins. And we have plenty of sources to back up our plan on why we're doing it the way it is. It's 24 pages. But then our whole front page really is full of information. We have one place here. This is extremely important, and I only posted this recently, maybe about 2 weeks ago or a week ago. And right on our front page, you see the little American flags waving in the wind and see extraordinary actions, which you should read a lot of that there. In red, if you have recently awakened to the conspiracy to destroy America and the war that is raging throughout the world, that is being suppressed by the complicit subversive media, and want to catch up, or if you want to keep up to date on what's really going on behind the scenes, click on Q above on the blue bar and view the videos in the pages under Q. So if you go up to Q and you highlight Q, to catch up, first of all, I'd say read the plan. Second of all, I'd say go under the Q button and see the plan, Q's plan to save the world. Steve Bannon is, we have a page just for this guy. He gives us the inside things on the Trump administration. He reveals so much things on what's going on behind the scenes over the past years and stuff. Also, the X-22 report is news behind the scenes also. So we have news behind the scenes, and we have inside the Trump administration with Steve Bannon, and we have the plan to save the world with Q. Those three pages are extremely important and will just give you a whole bunch of information. Now, there is one other thing that I'm putting together. You know, we've been looking at this new flu bug going around, and we're going to put a page up there. And, you know, they say that there's no cure for this thing. So we're going to do some more investigation. We're going to put some videos up there, some information, and we're going to put the cure up there because there is a cure. When they had the problem with anthrax out in Washington, D.C., they treated that with crystallized MMS, okay? It was MMS in the crystal form, and that's how they killed it, okay? MMS will kill any parasite, any pathogen. It just kills it, okay? It'll turn green water and brown water clear, okay? And that's the chemical name is what? Hydrochloric acid? Is that what it is, Gerard? Let me take a look. It's called hydrochloric acid. Hydrochloric acid. And the solution to 28% solution sodium chloride, and put it together, it activates. Now, we're going to lay out a plan, or what would I say, a protocol. We're going to lay out a protocol on how to keep yourself safe should this thing become a big epidemic. And we have a serious problem. Well, how to really, on a daily basis, do what you have to do to prevent yourself from getting the disease. MMS is just so, so powerful. And we'll talk more about that, but we're going to get a page up on that. People can review it. We'll show people where they can buy this stuff and what the protocol is. And there's numerous ways to take this in. First of all, you want to take it in through your lungs, so you breathe it in. We'll show you it's very dangerous to breathe in the crystal because you can kill yourself. It takes your breath away. But even the liquid, you only want one drop in a nebulizer cup with maybe a drop of, oh goodness, what's that other stuff called? I use colloidal silver, yeah, and people should use that. You can get that at any health store, Mother's Earth or something like that. No, the other thing that that you put a drop in or two drops.
Oregano oil?
Well, oregano oil is good too. I use that also. But there's the other thing that clears the sinuses. What do they call it? Elliptic, what is it?
Eucalyptic?
Eucalyptic, yes. So anyway, you know, we'll lay out a protocol on how to, you know, put it into a nebulizer in a safe way and take it into the lungs. You gargle with it to clear out the throat. That's where really any kind of a pathogen, whether it be a virus, a cold, or anything, usually starts in the lungs and works its way down. I mean, starts in the throat and works its way down into the lungs and into your body. So you put it in your stomach by taking it through a capsule. You put it into your lungs by taking it through a nebulizer. You put it into your throat by gargling it. And also, you know, if you have a hot tub, you know, I put my hot tub We use MMS, so you get it on your skin. Or you can put a 7 drops or something into a hot bath and soak in that. So you would kill anything that's on your skin, anything in your belly, anything in your lungs, anything in your throat, and you can protect yourself. All right, but we'll get into those details once we get the pages up. Next question.
Who is there to answer questions about the forms or modifications due to specific situations? I can't rely on forum answers or have any desire to be on a public call about them.
I don't know what he's talking about. Do you know?
Well, they don't want...
Are you talking about the forms we have that we're putting out there for court?
They want a private audience, John, to go over there.
Well, we don't have the time for that.
Right. You know?
Even if people were to pay me, I wouldn't do it because I need to be doing what I'm doing here. So, next question. There's nothing we could do.
Okay. When we begin to set things right in our courts, it appears we need to assure that those jurists who are chosen to serve have learned the truth and what is expected of them adequately. Otherwise, justice will not be inevitably served.
Look, the common person, generally speaking, is going to go along with the protocol and realize the importance of what they're doing when they come to act as a jurist. We will make sure we orientate them into that. And I don't know who I'm coming through, so I'm kind of just, muting everybody I see out there. Anyway, I forgot where we were. What was the question again?
About concern about the jurists not having...
Oh, yeah, okay, I got it. Yeah, look, we will lay out the necessary things that jurists need to know. First of all, when they come and sit on a jury, I'm sure people realize the seriousness of it. They could be the person that's being, you know, accused of something. But we'll make it clear to them. And it doesn't take long to orientate a jury. You could do it in 4 to 6 or 8 hours. We get up to 8 hours to orientate a jury. First day's orientation, and we will put together a really good program. We have most of what we need to put together. We just have to put it together in a flow form and offer it to the administrators in order to give to the people to prime them and prepare them, and also to encourage them. You know, we'll encourage them maybe to take courses, okay, and everybody should come out and take these courses to learn more. But we definitely will give them enough information to be able to fulfill the job. Remember, we're being judged by our peers, and it's under common law. And it's all about it's really about finding the facts. And as people speak in court and questions go back and forth and answers come back and forth, after a while you start to see the contradictions where the lie is maybe, or you start to see the truth and it unfolds. And when the jury comes together and they get to discuss it, you know, they share their positions, their perspectives, and you really do come to a point where you can, in most cases, make a good decision on innocent and guilt. And if you're truly divided and you can't get there, then you got to acquit the person, and that's it. But the same thing with a grand jury. God said he's written his law in our hearts. And so we know right from wrong. And the key thing is do no harm. And that's the key to all law. Do no harm. Did someone harm somebody or did they not harm somebody? And if they did, who did it? And how do we know they did it? It's really the best person to be judged by are the people. Next. No more next? Jan?
Yeah, I got muted, sorry. This is from Chapter 5, History of the Sheriff. Therefore, when there is a conflict between the law and statutes, the Constitution must prevail, because statutes are not law unless we the people give the legislators authority to write such laws through the Constitution. This is Law 101. It does not get any more difficult than this. I don't understand this because we did give legislators authority to write laws in Article 1 of the Constitution. Please explain.
Well, that's in the equity courts, Okay. We give them, and they can't write any law that is repugnant to the Constitution. If it conflicts with the Constitution prevails. And if you're in a court where these statutes apply, and there are 57 different jurisdictions, some of it administrative, half of them are just administrative, and the other half are law. You know, they've been enacted into law where they do have a jurisdiction, and there is a consequence at the end of the day in those courts. And so those courts, remember, were created, they're called equity courts, and they were created in order to govern our government, okay, and commercial activity, and also the law of the sea that we participate with. And certain other things. There are a few other things. You know, there's the bankruptcy law that we've given them authority with to do. They also and some other things. But basically, the law that we the people are judged under is the law of the land. It brings us under common law, and the Constitution is the law of the land too. But it brings us under common law. And we are judged by our peers, and there are no statutes that prevail, and there are no rules written by men. They're the rules of common law. And again, if you want to know the rules of common law, as I mentioned earlier, you can go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight education, come down to weekly topics, and it's the fourth one down. It says Rules of the Common Law Courts. Read that page, and you'll understand a lot better how a common law court operates and goes forward. Next question.
Okay, this
I think
person
this will be the last one. We're on this too long, but go ahead.
Okay. This person is from Hawaii, and she writes, I was curious about the lack of knowledge about the sheriff and their duties and began to look into the militia section on the website. As I began the adventure, watching the first two videos about the sheriff, it says specifically that the sheriff is for we the people, not the government.
Right.
But the very first page of the website for Hawaii sheriffs, by expressing their duties, it states, the sheriff's division carries out law enforcement services statewide. I got a little disturbed that their duties are to serve the government and not us people. How do we start correcting this issue?
Well, where is that on Hawaii's page?
Yeah, Hawaii, yes.
Did you look into that yet to see what's up there on Hawaii's page?
No, I haven't. This one.
All right. Well, we'll look into that and see what's up there, and if something inappropriate is up there, we'll take it down. You know, we do have state pages, and people make comments and different things, and you know, sometimes the comments aren't correct. What we teach here, we try to be as faithful to truth and facts as possible. Of course, from time to time we make errors, and we'll correct those errors as we make them. But generally speaking, we strive to really have some solid, good information with plenty of sources to prove the information and the facts. So, yeah.
She says this is the website for the Hawaii sheriffs. Says this, not ours.
Oh, okay. Well, they
they're the bad guys, right?
Yeah. Look, at the sheriff is the people's cop. He's there to he's a constitutional cop. That's what he is. He's supposed to really keep the law, maintain the law. I'd like to see the day where police forces disappear and the sheriffs pick up the whole thing. You'll always have private forces somewhere, but I can see towns and villages and even some cities, fold once they can no longer apply, equity or statutes, whatever you want to call it. And I don't even know I want to call it equity because it's really civil law, so it's not even equity. So with these places that are applying civil law against the people unlawfully, once we get the sheriff to know his job and to prevent that from happening and to protect the people, and those courts will start closing down. And once the courts start closing down, that's their money machine that not only pays for a lot of things that they like that they shouldn't necessarily need or have, but it pays for the police department. And so those police departments will start shutting down. And if that happens, at some point, we'll be left with the sheriff and the state police. Now, the sheriff, I think, is the key. I think the sheriff should be the only cop of the state or the county, shall I say, in X amount of counties in every state. And they can, you know, take on more deputies in order to, you know, fill the void. But then there's a lot of things that people are in jail for. They don't belong in jail. People are arrested for things that they shouldn't be arrested for. So a lot of that's just going to disappear, and they will be dealing with the serious crimes. But it is up to the sheriff to make sure that the people's rights are appreciated by the government or agents of the government or whatever you want us to call that. All right. I think we're going to have to end there, and we'll pick a rest next time. I'm going to pass the board over to you, Gerard. Are you ready for that? Would we lose you? Gerard?
I lost my mouse.
Oh, okay. Well, did you find it? I guess so, huh?
I need a mouse to unmute myself. It's the mouse that roared. Hang on a minute.
All right, I'm passing the control of the board over to you. I'm going to introduce Brent. Brent, are you ready?
He went to the kitchen to get a snack.
Oh, okay.
There was a little short question about Hawaii here, if you want to do it, John.
Well, I'll do it real quick before Brent gets in here.
Okay, my concern about the militia here in Hawaii was that back in 1887, we had a committee of safety, and they overthrew our monarchy, Queen Liliuokalani. I have attached a website, and so on and so on. That's one case where the sounds like the committee of safety might have got a little out of hand, maybe. I don't know.
Well, look, at the committee of safety is supposed to be the people. Obviously, if they did wrongdoings, then maybe they were just a group of people that called themselves the people, and the rest of the people didn't step up and do what they needed to do. If the people stepped up, if the people were taught, then we need to teach them in schools, we need to teach them when they're young, and we need to teach the people today. If the people understand and the law and, you know, our heritage and common law, the difference between equity and law, and understand the basic ideas and how our court system works and our political process works and those basic things, which is nothing really, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know it. But if we're all up to that and we're all participating in the militia like we should be doing, and we're participating with the committee man process like we should be doing, and responding to the jury call that we should be doing, we wouldn't have a problem. We would have a government by and for the people. We would have government by consent. So it's up to us to get educated and do what has to be done to prevent small groups from hijacking the process, claiming themselves to be the people, and taking us down a road we don't want to be. With that, Brent, are you ready to go?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to pass it over for a while to Brent Winters. He's an author of The Excellence of the Common Law and other books, The Militia of the Several States, and so on. His website is commonlawyer.com, and if you want his militia booklet, it's a pocket handbook. You can find it on the right-hand side of our website. If you click on the little booklet there, you'll find yourself on one of Brent's pages where you can get information to get the book and other books. Brent, you got the mic. Gerard, you got the board.
Thank you.
Okay, Gerard, you do have the board, right? I want to make sure that the board is... Because I'm going to walk away.
Yeah, okay. I do, yeah.
And I'm going to be in and out right now, so, okay.
Thank you. My name is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, and I'm presently out in the middle of nowhere driving and listening. Enjoy the discussion very much. My comments are my own. I take responsibility for them. They're not necessarily maybe in agreement with the other principals on this call. But I want to mention the National Rifle Association and the experiences of others. John mentioned them. Maybe he's had some experiences. I'm going to tell you what mine are. 25 years ago, or somewhere in there, I ran for Congress. And the issue was the Clinton crime bill. That was the big one. That was something that had rankled people's sensibilities all over the country. Benton's crime bill had a tax on ammunition. It was upwards of 10,000% value of the ammunition. Everything was in there to eliminate private ownership of firearms. Well, of course, the candidates running for Congress sought the support of the NRA because the NRA was the gorilla on the block when it came to that question. They were well organized. Where I was, they were well organized. Had representatives in every county or two. Running for Congress, I wanted their endorsement. And they said, oh yes, we want to talk to you. Well, the fellow that I was running against voted for the Clinton crime bill and other gun control measures, but promoted himself as a promoter and supporter of the Second Amendment. He was the consummate politician. And what's a consummate politician? He's a man who says and does what he says and does while thinking quite something else. That's what he did. He voted one way, of course, and talked the other. That's common, not uncommon. Well, I thought, well, this will be easy. Of course, I'm a neophyte in this business. I didn't have any money. But a few people started sending me money, and they'd write little notes, $50 here, $100 there, and they'd say, I don't know who you are, but if you're running against Glenn Pichard, I'll vote for you. And here's a little money. Well, as it turned out, because of Clinton's crime bill, I was able to mount a respectable campaign as a neophyte. Well, I, of course, contacted the local representatives of the National Rifle Association, told them that I wanted to talk to them. They said, oh, yes, we support you, we support you. We know that your opponent is against firearms ownership. We're going to set up a meeting with you, the big boys in Washington, D.C. Well, I found out the big boys in Washington, D.C. were not big boys at all. They were a few big girls who thought they were boys. I mean that in the literal sense. Well, I wound up on the Hill, and that's where their office was at that time. I recall vividly having to go through two or three locked doors with chains on them just to get into the office. The office wasn't far from Republican National Headquarters, which wasn't far from the Capitol building on the Hill. I remember all that. I came in, and somebody met me and said, well, you'll sit down in this conference room here. We'll have somebody come in and talk to you. Oh, okay. We'll have the representative from your part of the country who makes the decisions about such things. Oh, that's fine. Well, the person I was with had to I had to go to the room where you drain your radiator. And they went. This person went and came back and said, we got to get out of here. I said, what do we got to get out of here for? Said, well, I don't have time to talk about it right now. We just got to get out of here. Well, there wasn't anybody in the room. And I said, are you sure? He said, yes, I'm sure. Let's go. And Pertinier had to take me by the hand like the angels of God did to Lot to get him out of Gomorrah. Drag him out. Well, I thought, this is odd. Well, we left. We got outside. And this person told me, I said, what was the problem? Said, well, it was blatantly obvious. These people aren't going to help you. I said, how do you know? Well, I said, when I was walking back to the restroom, walked through all these desks and all, everybody I saw was confused about their sexual identity. I said, everybody? And this person said, yeah, everybody I saw, and I don't mean a little bit confused. Well, that surprised me a little. But as time went on, I discovered that the person in the NRA that made decisions about who got support, endorsements, and money was a woman by the name of Tanya Mataska. Tanya Mataska. Now, Tanya Mataska was confused about herself. She was a lesbian, self-proclaimed. Now, by this time, I'd had the endorsement and the help of Charlton Heston. Because the fellow that was running for U.S. Senate, I went to a fundraiser, and Charlton Heston was supposed to be there. Charlton Heston, you remember, was the man that played Moses in the movie Ten Commandments and a whole lot of other movies. a big country with Gregory Peck and more than I could name. And the person that put the fundraiser on asked me to introduce Charlton Heston. And that was a pretty ominous task for me, so I went down to the library in the little town where I was, in one of those little Carnegie libraries that was built back when Dale Carnegie, not Dale, but the other Carnegie, donated money for libraries. I got a book. It was his most recent, Charlton Heston's most recent autobiography, and I tried to read as much as I could of it, try to think of something to say. Well, as it turned out, I said something, and I got to talking to him, or talking up to him. He's a tall man, about 6.5 feet tall. He's gone now. And he said, I want to do radio commercials for you. I said, well, that's great. He said, send me a script. So we wrote up a script, and he discarded it and said, I can do better than that. He contacted us and said he could do better. He did radio recordings for me that I could run on the radio. I've got those recordings somewhere. They ought to be worth a lot of money by now. I remember they had all of his outtakes in it, too, all the when he'd make mistakes and get upset with himself. But he did those. But I had his support. But Tanya Matanska decided that they weren't going to give me any endorsement and they weren't going to give me any money. And they were going to support my opponent, of course, who had voted consistently against against private firearm ownership. Well, after that, then Larry Pratt contacted me. And Larry wasn't as well known then as he is now. And he told me at that time he wanted to support me. He asked me if I'd be willing to support legislation that would reestablish gun rights to the best of what was available to reestablish given the court cases. I said, yeah, I'll do that. He said, well, then you have our support. And they gave me all the money that was legally allowable. And he came and talked to me, and we traveled around the district together, did press conferences, drummed up quite a bit of support. But he told me at that time that he wasn't at that time ready to come out against the National Rifle Association, but he knew what they were. And here's what they were and what they probably still are. That's been a number of years ago, but I don't imagine it's changed. They want the money to keep coming in because it's a good jobs program where people make a lot of money. But they don't really want to do anything. They want to make it look like they're trying to do something so the money keeps coming in, but never solve the problem, because if they solve the problem, they're out of all that money. And by the way, I found out that was true of the National Right to Life also. They don't want to solve the problem. They just want the money to keep coming in and act like they're solving the problem and keep the hype going. Well, the NRA and the National Right to Life, both of them, by the way, both of them supported my opponent, who supported abortion and gun control. Now, that's the madness. And it wasn't an isolated case. Mine wasn't. I learned when I got on the inside, that's the way it's done. And I also learned any time there is an organization, and especially the bigger it gets, the evil empire, all the evil empire has to do is control one person who controls that organization. They control a lot. They're not out here trying to control everybody. They love organizations. They love corporations. They love governments. You can get somebody in charge of government, power in government, like that Islamic fellow they had in there that claimed he was an American black man, and he really wasn't much of one at all, sitting in the White House. All they had to do was control him, and they controlled a lot of us and didn't want to be controlled. That's the M.O. of the evil empire. That's why it's important that power be distributed. That's why in America, we're fortunate. We have three branches of the government, separate and equal. We have states that are sovereigns in their own right. We have churches, and we have the press, and we have grand juries that are independent of everything. We have all sorts of things in America, but the division and separation of power is the thing that's so important. Well, that's been my experience. Now, Gun Owners of America has now come out and said why they were established, and the reason was to overcome the wrongful influence of the National Rifle Association. And I hope they last a long time, but at some point I'm sure that the evil empire is watering at the mouth and dripping at the tongue to try to get their hands on the gun owners of America as well. And if that happens, then there has to be a, I hope it doesn't, of course, and then, as long as Larry Pratt and his son are around, his son, Eric, I believe his name is kind of in charge of that now. I don't think that probably will happen, but leadership is important. But that's what the evil empire does. If there is an organization, I don't care whether it's a university, a church denomination, a local church, whether it's a political action committee, corporation, the evil empire loves those things. That gives them opportunity. You say, well, should we organize? Well, yeah, as much as we can. Unity is the power of it all. Once there's unity and a common purpose among two or more people, there's real power there. But we must be forever vigilant, and when that happens, we need to break off like Larry Pratt did and say, no, I'm not going along with you anymore. I'm going to do something different. As Paul the Apostle said, and he said rightly, there must be divisions among you. Don't be upset about divisions. Divisions are what keep our freedom. If there weren't divisions, divisions within government, divisions within what is called the visible church, all these things are good. They're not bad. Oh, yeah, you get a lot of evil with it, but don't tell me that the people that want ecumenical power and unity of all things don't tell me they're not evil. I know they are. And the bigger they get, the more evil they get. The presumption against them should become greater, because power exacerbates corruption, as Lord Acton, well, he said something like that. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, he was really wrong as a precise matter. Power never corrupted anybody. It's the men are already corrupt. It's the power exacerbates the taint of corruption that is deep down inside of all of us. And if it gets excited in the wrong way, we're in trouble. We got to beat ourselves down, as Paul the Apostle says. I beat myself. I beat my body. I beat myself down. I discipline myself. That's where life becomes enjoyable. But that's been my experience with the National Rifle Association. Like all organizations, may have started out with a good intent. Matter of fact, I believe it did. Marksmanship, firearm safety, veterans of the war between the states began the organization, and it served well. But it has been taken over by perverts. Now, whether or not they're still there, I don't know. I know that after I ran, Charlton Heston was appointed the figurative head of the organization. I think that he was sucked into something he didn't understand. I mean, if you spend all of your life, and I heard him say this himself, you spend all your life pretending to be other people to make a living, you forfeit a whole lot of understanding of other things, as we all do. None of us know everything, but politics wasn't his forte until the end of his life, and he jumped into it. And I think that there were evil forces that tried to use him. That's what evil people do. They use other people to do their deeds and make it look like they're being supported by those people. That's the name of the game. So don't allow that to happen to you either. But to understand the pitfalls of politics and the evil empire will help us in our endeavor to promote freedom. But to fall prey to those pitfalls, as I've mentioned, some of the things, organizations, don't stay attached to organizations that are a lost cause. Matter of fact, our God doesn't ask us to reform things. He asks us to replace things. We are not to reform even our own lives. We are to replace them with our minds, for example. We are to replace our minds with His mind, as the Bible says. We are to have the mind of Christ. How do you do that? Well, you take in His thoughts. Well, where do you find His thoughts? Well, the sentences of God in His Word are His thoughts. I learned when I was in the 8th grade that a sentence is a complete thought. It has an actor and it has action. And that's what the thoughts of God are. They are complete thoughts. You can find them written. They are recorded. You can find them. And if you saturate your mind with them, then you have replaced the imperfections of your and the weaknesses of yourself with the power of your Maker. Fascinating concept. That's what the Bible teaches. And the same thing is true of government. We're not to reform our courts. We are to replace them with what is right. We are not to reform darkness, to make it blunt. We are to replace darkness with light. the light drives the darkness out. It flees, as the Bible says. What is the light? It is the truth. What is the truth? It is the will of our Maker. What is the will of our Maker? The will of the Sovereign. What is the will of the Sovereign? The will of the Sovereign is law. Always has been, whatever you take to be your Sovereign. And don't say it yourself. No. You're not the true Sovereign. The true Sovereign is the Maker of all things. It's an absolute term. We are, I suppose we can say, there is a sovereignty among men, nations. And I use that word that way, and I used it in this presentation this evening when I talked about the sovereign states. But that's a limited sovereignty. Again, an oxymoron, but we don't have words to express it. But there is a true Sovereign, and his will, says James the Apostle, is law. He's the only true lawgiver. Anything that is in consonant, that is contrary, let me say it right, that is contrary, everything that is contrary to his will is a lie. And everything that we say that is consonant with his will is the truth. It's permissible. And that's the test for what is lawful and what isn't. And Gerard, if you can thumb around there and hit the right buttons, I'll bet you'll come back on and take over. Thank you for, again, allowing me to say a few words, Gerard.
And, okay. Thank you very much. Okay, well, we have a few people in the queue. Seven or eight. I'm going to unmute Dan from the Carolinas, and we'll get going.
This is more or less a comment. I'm still a little bit recovering, guys, and thank you for your prayers. And I just totally tonight enjoyed Mr. John Durash and then Mr. Brent Winters there. That was a tremendous encouragement to all of us. And final note, we all need to get on board and get educated and encourage our neighbor, and definitely the different programs that are mentored and already authored that are there with our National Liberty Alliance. We hear every Monday night in encouragement. And so I'm trying to get this out again as to behoove all of our friends, neighbors, and for this education, and it's for all and for the best for America. And I want us to also take time to pray for our president and what he's going through, what he's been through, what he might be going through in the future. This is a tyrant bunch of people. That is no question about it. But I believe in our president. I believe that he is a godsend of intellect, a true leader, caring for all people. And in that said, I guess I need to yield back over to some of the others that maybe have some good questions and causes and would like to have some answers to some things that could be personal to them. I encourage them to continue on pursuing all the advice and continue on, joining up with us, and let's build America one brick at a time back to make it just like our president is campaigning for. And that's to make America great all over again. And what I do like about this gentleman, I can tell you he's not a politician, and that's a turn for the best that's ever happened up there. He cares deeply for America. He's not up there to fill his pockets full and with some type of agenda, and or use his office as to how Mr. John Durash parlayed things tonight to us that is truly against our Constitution and we the people. I yield back over.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan. Good hearing from you. Okay.
Yes, sir, thank you.
Next questioner, it looks like Lee from New Hampshire. Go ahead.
I had a question about filing a court paper against exceeding jurisdiction. I was just wondering what district or what have you to file that into.
Well, I don't quite understand. I mean, you mean exceeding jurisdiction? Are you talking about in a federal court or in a local court? Will you?
Well, that's exactly the question that I'm asking. So if an officer exceeds their jurisdiction, like where do you into what court do you file that? Like you have a claim on them for trespass. What do you file that into?
Well, are you filing it against like a judge or somebody on the court? Or are you filing against like a police officer? Because you know if somebody's exceeding their jurisdiction, all government officials have somebody above them. You know what I mean? Unless they're you know. I mean, we the people are above all of them. They get their power from us. But if it's a local thing, you go to the local court. But if it's a judge, whether it's the county or the state, and they don't have jurisdiction, then you end up in a federal court because the state's not going to fix the state. They could, but usually they won't. You know what I mean?
So all right.
If they're the ones doing the bad acting, you can't go to their courts looking for justice because they're not going to give it to you. You know,
right?
So you'd have to file it in the federal court. I mean, sometimes they'll kick it back down and say they'll tell you that you didn't exhaust all your remedies in the lower court. But when they're violating due process on you, and I don't know what you mean by exceeding jurisdiction. I mean, look at it, if you challenge jurisdiction. It has to be established, and they can't just proclaim it. They have to show it. So, and that could be done in a state court, but very often it doesn't happen. You end up having to go up into the higher court for that. So I don't know where you're at or what you're at.
Well, I was asking about a police officer rather than a court officer.
Yeah, and so if you're going to do a police officer, you're not going to take it up to the Supreme Court right away. You have to give the local court a chance to, you know, he's a servant of the people, but he also has, you know, superiors, and it goes up. And that obvious, and if he's broken the law by exceeding his jurisdiction, certainly the local judge can make a ruling on that. So you almost have to, you know, you have to start an action against him personally or make a complaint to his superior and follow the chain of command. And then, you know, and if they're not going to do anything about it, you know, they're going to push you around, then you go push it up to the next level and the next level, you know. I mean,
so
you could end up
in
federal court, but you're not going to start there with this because they're going to kick it right back down, you know.
All right. So you put a claim in at the county level then, or?
Well, I don't know what kind of police officer it was, but did you even talk to his superior, like to the captain or whoever is the head of the police department? Is it a state police or a local police?
Local.
Well, see, local police should be easier for you because I was on a town council, and we had a local police force, and the town board were the commissioners. So, we also had a chief. An acting chief, and that's where I would go first. If it's a superior, if it's an inferior officer and he's not the chief, you take it to his chief. I mean, you don't want to run it all the way up the line right off the bat. You might as well try to go through the chain of command and give them a chance to fix it. You know, I mean, I'm a business owner. If somebody's not happy with one of my employees doing, I'm always hope that they would come to me and let me know and not just go to the state and file a complaint. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So that's what I would do. I would take it to his superior, and you know, you don't even have to do it in writing to begin with. You could try to do it just by talking to him, and then you know, and you tell him, look, I'm willing to sign an affidavit to the effect of what he did if you need it, but give them a chance to discipline him or whatever. They may not agree with you. They may turn really nasty. I've seen that happen too, you know, because sometimes, you know, they're not going to admit their officers can do anything wrong, but you might be pleasantly surprised. I know that especially in a local police force like that, it's very important to lodge complaints because they're political animals. They don't like complaints. And if they get too many, then they're afraid that, you know, they won't be in there long. You know, if they tick off enough taxpayers, then the taxpayer gets to the town board and says, I don't know what's going on with this police force, but, you know, a couple times we had to threaten to close the police force down in my town because it was out of control for a little bit until we straightened it up, you know what I mean? But we did, and that was one of the things I ran on because they were so crazy with their police force and the stuff they were doing. And so that was my pet peeve, was cleaning the police force up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just give them a chance. That's all. That's all right. What I, you know, go in, see his superior, tell him you're willing to put it in writing, but if you don't have to, you know, if he's willing to talk to the guy and straighten it out, that would be fine. Otherwise, you're going to pursue it further. You know, you could always do a lawsuit if it's, you know what I mean? But you don't want to go there first.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, too. The other host there has made mention a few times about how he keeps a file of all the tickets he pays, and one day he may just sue them all. And I was wondering what court he would even go to for that.
Well, you'll have to ask him. I mean, you know, look, if he's going to... When he says one day he'll sue them all, it's because they violated his due process, and that's probably mm-hmm. going to be a federal court, you know what I mean? Depending on what's going on. Look, I would take it to a county court if things got straightened out, because you might actually get a chance of it, well, the county court is like the state court. It is like in, I don't know what state you're in, but New York, the county court is the Supreme Court. You know, and then there's different levels that you, as you go up, you know, there's different appeal levels until you get up to the state Supreme Court. And, you know, we have that unified court system, they call it. So they're all under the auspices of the county, and i.e. the state. So, but, you know, your local, look at your town judges are elected. If it's a town cop and there's a town judge, you could do the whole thing within the town. And I mean, that judge can make a ruling for you based on a lawsuit. They don't really have a lot of authority, but they're there, and you know, once you're in their court, they're Nizzy Prius. They really don't have the power to fine or incarcerate, but guess what? They do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, you being the plaintiff, you're making a complaint. Look at the local judge can fix it, but I wouldn't go into court right away. These things are usually better off talking to the chief and also talking to maybe a town board member, because town board members don't like these guys. And that's who I would complain to. Well, the first thing I would do is take it to his superior, and at the same time, maybe depending on what the superior said, I would take it to a town board member, and you'll get better results that way. You know, if you jump right into the court, you're kind of forcing them to recoil and defend themselves. This way here, they have a chance on kind of handling it behind the scenes and not being embarrassed by it, and maybe preventing a worse thing from happening. That's the best advice I can give you.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let's go for our next caller here. And it's Brent.
That's me.
Oh, you got a question?
Oh, I got lots of them, but I don't have
any answers, so I'm sorry. Okay, well,
I'll let somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Next one, it's a 928 number. There's no name. I don't know what state that is. Maybe you could give us your name and your state, but you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm wondering, do you know if anybody is winning their Title 42 1983 actions for police misconduct?
I don't know. I don't know if on that subject. I'm not involved with it right at this point. You talking about what court are you talking about? And that's a federal action.
That's federal court, U.S. District Court.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that we have any of them going in L.A.
Who do you have in L.A. that is the most knowledgeable person to talk about Title 42, 1983 actions?
Right. Well, we've put stuff in the federal court, and we've used those statutes. We've quoted those in our master case, but we don't have any specific cases against police officers with suits like that. I mean, we don't usually, if it's a police officer against a person. I mean, I'm not saying we don't get involved in that. You know, we have, but generally speaking, you know, we're trying to get people out of jail and that type of stuff. You know, doing habeas corpuses and things like that.
Well, that's a great thing, but there's a lot of people are damaged by these police officers that are out of control with excessive force. And these people need to be compensated for their injuries. So who in your organization at NLA is the most knowledgeable person to talk to on this subject?
Oh, well, they could fill out an intake and come in under our federal case, and we would quote that and put that in the docket on our case, because it certainly applies, you know what I mean? And you'd get you'd have to fill out an intake form with Jim, you know. There is a place where you pull down a form and it asks you questions to see what kind of case it is. I mean,
on your website?
On the website, yes.
Yeah. So I'm not real familiar yet with your website. So do you have people that are very knowledgeable about police misconduct lawsuits?
Well, look, it's all the same thing. I mean, as far as when you go to a federal suit, like I was talking to the other guy, when you have police misconduct, you know, it's hard to get into the federal if you haven't taken the steps on the local. First thing they're going to do is kick it back and say, you didn't exhaust, you know, they want the state and the county to handle that. If they can, they'll kick it right out unless you've already been down there doing stuff and not getting redress. You know, the federal
Many
court
people
really wants
decide.
To hear about
to bypass the state courts, and because they don't think they can get justice, so they go straight to the federal courts to file their Title 42 1983 action.
And you could do that if it's because that is a federal action, and we have paperwork on how to file that suit, and you can even put it in our master suit that's up there, because we have all kinds of cases for people being abused by officers and officers of the court and police officers, and they're in there, you know. But you may want to file your own federal case besides that, you know what I mean? You may want to go in and just file that 1983. I don't know that we're doing 1983 suits for people, but we certainly can give you the information if you're willing to research it and you feel comfortable. You know, it's hard to go to court if you're not comfortable with the courts and you don't know. We have a course on how to make a case and how to go to court. We have a jurisdictionary course that I highly recommend before you ever go into court, because, you know, once you're in there, if you don't know procedure, they'll take you out with procedure. You know what I mean? You don't object when you should object or something stupid like that. You'll lose the case on a technicality. You know what I mean?
The jurisdictionary course is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Gerard?
Yes.
I see Title 43, but I don't see a Section 1983.
No, it's Title 42.
My apology.
Yeah, and we've used that 1983. John has used it, I'm sure. I mean, and he could tell you more about that because he's written those cases. I mean, he's off right now, but maybe, you know, if you wanted more information. But I know that if you go into our website and you go through the court courses, that's going to brush you up a lot better for filing a case than, you know, you need that information. You can't go in there unknowledgeable, you know.
What's the fellow's name you just mentioned? Was it Don?
No, Jim usually supplies and goes over the intake forms if you wanted to do a joinder to our case. But in order to do a joinder, you should have the case made out already. You should have already tried to bring it to court, you know, and then we, as the grand jury, we come in when they violate your due process. I mean, you haven't done anything on this, have you? You have a case in court now?
Yeah, I do.
And where are you at with it? I mean, how long has it been in there, and what stage are you at? This is in a regular court, or I mean, this is local, or is this the Supreme Court?
Federal court.
It's in federal court. Okay, so you're moving through the federal court, and at what stage are you with your? I mean, how long ago did you file it, and where are you at?
It's in the beginning, and the judge is fighting me. I think the judge is working for the government to try to get my complaint dismissed. I think it's all corrupt.
Yeah, and it probably is. I mean, they'll throw you out under that rule, too. They'll tell you don't have a cause of action or some other such baloney. That's what they do with their
I'm not an attorney, and I'm not a corporation, so the little guy gets screwed almost every time.
There's no doubt, and we've experienced that, and even we're coming in as the grand jury and the people, and they still they step back a little bit, but they're still not there. In other words, they don't care.
I've got another question. When the judge is trying to get a case dismissed improperly, how do we hold that judge accountable for his nefarious deeds?
Well, I mean, as far as what we do, we'll warn them and we indict them. We put them on notice, and then we indict them as the grand jury. You can sue a judge. They don't like it very much. You can do lots of things to judges, but it's a good old boys club, so you don't get very far with the way things are right now. You could cause him to recuse himself and give it to another judge. I mean, you should, a 1983 case. I don't know that's because that's a federal case. It won't necessarily go in front of a jury. I don't think.
It will go to a jury if I can get him to accept my complaint and my First Amendment complaint.
Well, if he throws it out for no reason, then you just look at the cases that we wrote where they tried to throw our cases out, and go over the papers that we've written at that point where they said, oh, no, you can't do this because you're not an attorney, or because you don't have a cause of action or whatever. We've done those cases, and you can read them, and you'll get an idea of what to do, because we've documented those cases where what steps we took after we went into the court. And that's,
okay, you're telling me the NLA is willing to share your documents with pro per litigants that are fighting these cases in court. Is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely. They're all posted for you to read. They're all up there.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay, I need to get more familiar with your website.
You go in on the grand jury tab. Some of the stuff you won't. Like when it comes to a lot of the court stuff, unless you're a contributing member where you're paying $5 a month or more, some of that stuff won't open up. I mean, we give a whole jurisdictionary course. I mean, as far as what we file, that's on. You don't have to be a member to see that. You can see the cases we file. That'll open up, I believe. And just reading through those is an education. And following through, but I suggest you read all those first, and then at some point maybe become a member to get to get some of the deeper knowledge and immerse yourself in that, because taking those judges to task is not easy, and I don't know how. I mean, look at what we've. If you go through and you read the cases, you'll see what we've been through. So that'll give you a good idea. And I mean, we're going in with an organization of over 7,000 people. So, they do have a little pause to reflect when you come in as an organization as opposed to a single person,
Yeah.
So, and that's where you can go so far too. And then when they get really, when they really violate you, then you come in and fill out a joinder with Jim and attach your case to ours in the indictment that we're going to give them. And look, now's a good time because there's a lot of stuff going on in the courts, and there's going to be some cleaning up. So timing is everything in law. So I think this is a good time to get your case going, because if there was ever a chance of things getting, there's been lots of new federal district judge put in by Trump. Now, you know, we always thought we'd maybe come across a judge that was an actual, you know, Bible, you know, true law judge, but that was more hopeful wishing. What we found out was is none of them were following the law, you know. So we have hope now that there's been, I don't know how many, 150, 160 new judges, you know what I mean? So you might get somebody that's more constitutional, because all the ones we ran into, they constantly violate the Constitution. And we're,
right.
we're always
That's what
them.
I've been experiencing, yeah. I've had judges defraud me. I've got one case going that's in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals now. It's been going for 15 years.
Yeah,
I'll eventually win it, but right now it's in the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah, well, if you kept the case going for 15 years, you probably got your feet under you. You know what you're doing somewhat, so...
Yeah, well, I wish I had studied jurisdictionary 20 years ago.
Right, right. Well, go in and read our cases. They are an education of their own right. Just go
through that.
I
will do that.
You know,
I will do that. Thank you for that referral.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's
Thank
your name?
You.
I'm sorry, what was your first name?
Nick.
Nick, okay. Nice talking to you, Nick. And come on back and let us know how you make out.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, yep.
All right.
Okay, we got Marvin.
Yes. Hi. Yeah.
Odumas.
I had a similar question to the other fellow concerning your paperwork, the verified show cause. I have a foreclosure action going here, and I'm trying to figure out who do I send the verified show cause to for some type of response before I take it into the district court. Do I send it to the judge in the state court? I'm here in New York, Brooklyn, and it's been going on for about 10 years, and I'm trying to...
The foreclosure's been going on for 10 years?
Yes.
Wow.
And finally, he went to three judges. I mean, it's just, like you said, they just violate your rights, due process rights, equal protection in the law. I mean, it just... Nothing you say, they have any inkling to listen to whatsoever.
Well, look, you got to send your show cause into that court that you're in right now. You're into a three panel, so you're into appeals already.
No, I didn't go. I didn't move to the appeal.
Okay.
I moved. I'm in. I'm looking at the district court right now. I mean, I didn't really go into
the district court is three judges also, is it not?
No, not that I know of. No.
Okay, so you'd have to send the show cause to that judge in that district court
okay.
as what I would think, and then you know,
right.
And then you could it would go up to the appeals court. But, you know, at any point that they're violating your due process, you can jump right into the federal court, take it right out of the state court.
Right.
You know?
That's exactly where I was headed.
Yeah,
but
well, you probably end up doing
cause,
that.
The verified show cause would go to whom at this point? You're sending that to the initial verified show cause. You're sending that initially to whom?
You're going to send it in the court you're in because that's who violated you. The show cause why it shouldn't be. I mean I don't know if we send that also up to the federal. That could go up to the federal court. You could push that up to the federal court.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And send it
so,
to the
I
federal
mean,
court.
So,
show cause why they shouldn't sanction this judge or why they shouldn't rule for you. But you know when you go in the federal court, you can't talk about your case. You can only talk about the violations of your due process. That's where people make a mistake. You don't really discuss the ifs, ands, and fors of the foreclosure. What you're going to discuss is how your due process rights have been violated, and so you didn't even get a chance to discuss the ifs, ands, and buts of the foreclosure because they've already violated your due process, which is an inalienable right, and that's what you're taking up to the federal court. That's what they're going to consider. They don't, you know, you don't want them considering the rest of the case. It's not their business.
Well, yeah, because then they'll start saying, well, this sounds like an appellate. You want us to act as an appellate division for you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
No, when you prepare, that's why you should probably, you know, at some point you should do an intake with Jim.
and we'll go through your paperwork and your affidavit and stuff and do a joinder to our case, but that'll help you, you know, when you're filing your paperwork to keep you straight as far as where you want to be, you know what I mean?
Okay. So, all right. Well, I mean, I was under the impression that I first send the verified show cause to the state court, let them respond to it saying, well, I need you to show that you have jurisdiction. We're talking about the jurisdiction issue here. Let them show first that they have jurisdiction after 30 days. If they don't respond to this verified show cause demanding evidence of jurisdiction.
Right. It has to go to the court that you're in, that you initiate the action that you're in.
Right. Okay, so send it to them first. If they don't respond,
right, because they're actually the party that's injuring you. Is that you know, and that's who you're giving the show cause to, right?
Okay, yes, that's correct. All right, so I send it to the judge, the particular judge who's doing all the damage.
That's right.
Okay. All right, I understand now. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Now, with the evidence. That before I take it to the district court, after I do that, what kind of evidence do I need to show that I did first go to the state court and ask them to respond to this show cause?
Well, you should go in and fill the form out and talk to Jim, because that gets attached as evidence. You attach that case as evidence.
Okay.
In other words, you attach your show cause that you look at. If they don't. Matter of fact, if you do a show cause up there and they don't respond, then you're going to do a default. That's a little different, and we can help you with that. We do them all the time. You know what I mean? If they don't, chances are he's not going to answer. That would be my guess, because that's what they do.
Yes, I agree.
And then you have to do a default, you know, and you got to file the default. You got to file it with the clerk and try to push it through that way and see how it goes. They won't like it very much, but when you file. You know, when they don't answer and then you file a default, a lot of times that shakes them loose, too. They get nervous because they figure you don't know what you're doing. So then when you file the default, that upsets them, because at that point, you know,
right.
you can take it to the next step, you know what I mean? Or you could just go to the clerk and get a default judgment on it, which I don't think she'll do if it's the judge, you know what I mean?
Right. Okay.
But you show that you put a paper in, and they didn't answer in 30 days, he's done. He has to follow the law just like we do.
Yes. Yes. I'm finding that they really don't want to do that. They do whatever they want to do.
Well, and that's why when you take it to the next step, like filing defaults, that's when you might shake something loose, because once they see that default paper, because they have so many days to answer that after you file it. You know, you may see him. He may come around, you know.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So you just follow the steps and see, because you don't know what you're going to run into up there.
Right. Now, okay, where does it stipulate here that they have 30 days on the verified show cause document here? I'm looking at a copy of it.
Well, that's part of the rules. Here, listen, I'm going to open Jim up so he can talk also. Go ahead, Jim. Ooh, did I lose Marvin? No. Marvin, you still there?
Yes. Well, I had to unmute myself, that's all.
Oh, well, now you're both unmuted, so go ahead. Now he can hear you and you can hear him. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds as he's on the right track. The only problem that we're finding is that the paperwork that people make up for themselves is really not acceptable to us to move them into our case, because they usually go into a statutory realm and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is we made up this show cause with an amicus curiae, and you know, it comes along with the course and stuff like that, and there's a donation, but it just takes it all the way from soup to nuts. It's all, you know, it's all figured out. There's no more of this what do I do next, because that's what most people are at. And that's where
right.
It takes filling out the intake form, and then we go from there. It's pretty simple. And if he wants, he can see some of them right on the website under the grand jury tab for the action against the judiciary case. He just has to search around, you know, and they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can probably get called from the welcoming committee if he's a new member, and
yeah.
And they'll take him right to it, you know. You can even call in there to them.
Right. So that's
but,
good
I mean,
advice.
I can help him too if he wants, but I don't usually respond until somebody gets the intake form at me. Then I can respond to him.
Right.
So I should start with the intake form first. Huh.
Yeah, you just got to start on that abusive courts page. You know, it'll
walk you through. It'll walk them right through it, right?
Yeah, it's on there. You see it on the front banner. It's got the judge with the hammer in his hand. It says foreclosure help and stuff, and you click on that, brings you right to the page. So you don't have to go searching the site. It's right on the front page.
Okay.
And then follow the directions there, and they're pretty expansive. And if you got any questions, then there's people that you can email to find out how to get through it. Or the welcoming committee, stuff like that. But
okay.
And once I get the intake, then you and I will know each other, and then that's when I start dealing with it. I don't deal in the for instances. But it works out. We got a lot of people doing it. It's pretty cut and dried, really. The only thing you really need to do is just follow the instructions explicitly. Otherwise, it just ends up costing you more time.
Okay.
So that's all I have to say. Yeah, just get, and the other gentleman too. He was like asking, you know, where do I go and stuff. You just
so
have to get in.
So what happens when I can't interim? Once we start filing, does it continue to move forward? How can we stop? Kind of basically, especially with a full.
Well, you can challenge jurisdiction anytime, anywhere you go. Usually in appeals. Place like you're at, if you're in appeal, we usually tell you to pull out of the appeal or continue on with it, and we'll do this. Make up your papers, and as soon as they come in with your appeal and you don't like it, boom, then you can move it to our case. So you don't have to destroy your case; you can work on it, have all the papers ready to go because you do everything.
Right.
And I mean everything.
Okay.
You make up the, you know, we give you the papers; they're all filled out and all, but you do all the legwork. Only finding out the addresses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You'll see. By the time you're done with this, guess what? If you have to do another one, you'll know just how to do it.
Okay.
And maybe you can help some of our other listeners.
I mean, you'll get all the steps that I give you. I just won't give them to you ahead of time because then you won't follow the steps. You'll just jump all around,
right.
And it'll be a mishmash. But by the time you go through the case, you'll have all 10 steps in your... And they're kind of expansive steps, but they're steps nevertheless, you know.
Okay.
It's a pattern.
Sounds good.
You don't even have to, I wouldn't even say you don't have to think about it, because you have to take the government by consent course, and you'll be learning as you do the paperwork. Most people find it quite enjoyable, because they see light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh.
Yeah, and understanding gives you, you know, is exciting when you get, it's knowledge is power. When you're gaining that knowledge, you know, that's what holds your interest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So now you can imagine my place right here with 100 of them.
Right.
Well, thank you, Jim.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
It's what I do. All right. I'll mute up.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'll look at that intake form or that website.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Marv. Yeah. Bye. We're going to go to Tricia from Arizona. Go ahead, Tricia. You've been unmuted. If you're there.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, it's Trish.
Hey.
I did a joinder with you guys.
Okay.
For my IRS case. And they received the, I believe it's a motion to move it to your case in federal court.
Mm-hmm. Move for cause,
They received that on December 27th. Now, I need to know what goes on, because right now, I mean, I spent 3 years in prison. I had 3 years probation. I'm still on probation until May. And do I continue filling out these probation forms and paying restitution, the extortion?
Well, if you don't continue, they're going to pick you up and throw you back in jail because that's how they operate. That's what
right.
You know that's what they're going to do.
Right.
And they're not going to stop because you send them some magic paperwork. The only time that paperwork is going to come magic is when the deep state is dying and the rule of law is put back in. Now, we're hoping that that's going to happen soon. But
yeah.
I can't tell you when that's going to happen. And if you're on probation, I would be very careful, you know, because you get somebody ticked off up there, and they'll violate you even though you're not violated. You know what I mean? They don't like what you're doing in the court or whatever, and they
right.
get together with the judge, and they'll sanction you. Before you know it, they'll rip you back in there. They'll be standing in front of them. They'll tell you, don't file any more pay. They'll tell you all kinds of stuff, but. You know, don't forget they got the guns in the jails, and that's the problem.
I understand that they have no law to do what they're doing to me.
Nope, but they did it anyway, didn't they? It doesn't help you.
And I think it's very interesting watching this impeachment proceeding because they did the same thing to President Trump.
Isn't this wonderful? it's not wonderful, but what's wonderful is it's all out in the open now, isn't it?
It's all out in the open, yeah.
I love it. I'm excited. I can't believe that some of this stuff is really being said on regular lamestream TV because, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I never liked Giuliani. I never thought he was a great guy.
No,
you know,
me neither.
and when he was cleaning up New York City, he was having the cops bust people's head. I mean, they were over the top. I mean, he did clean it up, but he violated a lot of people's, you know, rights, but you know, look at God works in strange ways, and look at even Saint Paul was killing Christians before God grabbed them, right?
Right.
So I'm not going to question it. I just know that he seems to be doing the right thing, and you know, I don't, you know, everybody says, oh well, you know, Trump's faking, Giuliani's faking. Look at a house divided cannot stand. They said the same thing to Christ when he was healing people and throwing devils out. The scribes and Pharisees said, you're just using the devil to do that. And he said, yeah. He says, a house divided cannot stand. So in other words, they're doing more damage to the deep state. If they're part of the deep state, they're tearing it down for sure, you know?
Yeah.
And they're exposing it. Seems like the light is on. These things, you would have never heard about these. None of this stuff would have been to light if it wasn't for Trump getting elected. You wouldn't have heard this stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff wouldn't have never come out if it wasn't for
No.
So just be careful
in the court. Bide your time because timing is everything. And right now, you look at, there's going to become a time where it's time for you to really pull the trigger. But if I would, look at, try to get off that probation first. Don't do anything stupid when you're on. And I don't mean stupid. You know what I mean. Don't incite them until after you're off of that because they don't need much excuse to violate you.
Yeah, they've already retaliated against me. I mean, they continue to retaliate every time I file something, and they've already visited me when they received the amicus.
Period. Look, the fact that you're with NLA, I'm sure, is going to cool their jets a little bit. I don't know how much, but look, you're not alone. When you're with us, you're with a group of people, your story's out there. You're on a call tonight that's nationwide, that's all over the nation. Look, it's got to give them pause to reflect. I mean, unless they're completely, completely, you know, oblivious and or whatever, they have to be concerned, you know. I mean, they work well in the darkness. The fact that you have a national group that you're working with, and you're telling your story should help, but I would try to get off that probation before I did anything too, you know.
I just keep filling out the, you know, I've already tried. They won't let me off probation. They're going to make me serve it all.
Well, you said what do you got left? 3 months?
I got until May 17th.
Well, that's just right around the corner.
Yeah.
February, March, April, May. Yeah, I would comply with them because you just don't have the means not to at this point.
Okay.
They have all the resources. They, you know, they'll take control of you, and that does no good. You know, if you go to prison, you can't fight your case. You can always fight them later. You know what I mean? It's not
anything they do that's fraud or anything like that, there's no statute of limitations on that.
Right. I realize that. Everything has been fraud. Everything's been fraud.
Right. So don't, like I said, just hold yourself back until, you know, I mean, not, you can still do your paperwork and do whatever you're doing, but, you know, be careful what you file, especially if, you know, you got to report to them and you got to do certain things, you know, and ultimately, they're going to make a decision to release you. And I don't know if they have to. They could say, we don't think you're ready and extend it even. They could do stupid stuff that you don't even know about, you know. So
well,
try not to get them to do that.
They can actually extend my probation?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying that it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to do something like that, you know.
Yeah, well.
I don't know if they can. But
I was listening in. Now I'm a joinder into your case, a National Liberty Alliance case against the judiciary. Does that prevent me from filing my own 1983 action against these people?
No, I don't believe it does. I don't.
Okay.
I think you can. I mean, your joinder is just joining your case to ours. It's not ending your case.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I don't know. But I wouldn't file anything until
after you're
done with your probation, because God only knows what they can. You know, they don't follow the law anyway. So that's kind of an impediment for you. You're in there, you know, on probation. That's a problem, and they're going to take advantage of you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would just hold all that stuff off until you're out from under their clutches, and then you can go ahead and, you know, when you're not under their you know, their control, then you can do more. So,
yeah, I will never say I'm under their jurisdiction, because they never had jurisdiction in the first place.
No, I know, but of course they're acting like they do, and they're acting like
And the one thing, when probation came, and she brings a sheriff with her every time, because they are afraid of me for the documents I filed. And,
right.
I had filed a habeas. Everything's been denied, total denial of due process.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a kick-ass 63B motion, which it was denied. It would sound frivolous,
Everything's frivolous with them, and I don't know, they're going to do what they're going to do, and that's why, like, with habeas is, if you file them through us, through the grand jury, we don't ask the, you know, when you file a habeas, you're asking the judge's permission. See,
right.
What we do is we do the habeas, and we grant it. We become the tribunal on our case. Now, they may not listen to it, but guess what? It goes in, and it's part of the record, and they're afraid to take it out. So,
think was curious with my 60 D3 motion, I actually sent it to Sidney Powell well over 8 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was about entrapment. Ring a bell? I couldn't believe it when I read her motion for General Flynn, and I'm going, boy, this sounds familiar.
Yeah, right. Well, listen, it's after midnight. I don't want to go too long, because we try to keep the tape at a certain length here.
Okay.
So
okay.
I don't know what else I could tell you, give you the best advice I can, but, you know, just try to bide your time and get out from under them before you proceed,
right,
you know, to
right.
the next step, okay?
I mean, as far as I know, I'm in honor. They are not.
Right.
So I'll just keep it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, like I said, you could always fill out a form and you could join it to our case.
I already did.
Oh, okay, so that's good. So that's that. Look at you. Already did it. You already did a whole bunch more than most people could do, and it might still have an effect over here shortly. So why don't you, you know, wait and see what happens and get off that stupid probation, and then you can do some more. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much. You. And with that, I'm going to close down. It's late. It's 12:04.
Okay. And thank you. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming. And we'll see you here same time, same place next week. Have a good night, and God bless.